Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, the poverty tour continues. That's right, the GOP on the grand tour, going around the Commonwealth, looking for poverty, ferreting out the poor. They want to see what it looks like, maybe the first time in their lives. There's part of me that says give them credit for trying, but the big part of me saying this is a scheme. Look out what's coming next, and I think I'm pretty sure I know what it's going to be, because it's becoming abundantly clear to me that I was right from the beginning. Chairman Reed's just following orders, following the marching orders from the Alex of the world, from the wealth class, from the, well, the national GOME. I'm telling you, it's all the scam. Also going to talk about the fight for a living wage in fast food nation as the fight continues. An interesting turn as employers are turning on their corporate overlords at McDonald's. We'll talk a little bit about that. Also, GOP mission accomplished in Philadelphia as the massive budget cuts to education and the defunding of our public schools is causing the school district to threaten not to open its doors come this fall. A little interesting twist on that. Also, more news from Chicago as ALEC is holding its 40th annual Destroy America conference. I will talk to someone from there. And also, more on America, guns and drugs. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can also check out the website, thericksmithshow.com, or email me during the show, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So it is vacation time. And, you know, for people who put in a hard year's work, that week that they might get if they have a benevolent employer or a union contract, you know, it's time to rest because, you know, you worked your behind off all year long and you're well deserving of that vacation. Well, a lot of folks are looking at Congress going, I don't know. In fact, Fox News did a poll and found an overwhelming 82% of the people that they polled said, you know, I don't think Congress has worked hard enough for a recess. They should get their behinds to work. Democrats, they favored giving people a vacation. 17% said, you know what, they've worked hard enough. Only 13% of Republicans and 10% of independents said that Congress has done enough work over the last year to warrant a bit of time off. Overall, only 14% believed the break was deserving. Democrats, you know, they favored it. 17% said, hey. And you got to wonder why, because I don't think, I got to be honest, I personally don't think they've done anything worthy of a break. Get your behinds to work. Now, voters were a little more lenient when looking at the president. 48% said he deserved something of a summer vacation. But before the president goes on vacation, tomorrow going to be a big press conference. I guess it's the first solo press conference he's had in something like 3 months. He's going to be departing for a week-long vacation on Martha's Vineyard. Going to have this big press conference that everyone's anticipating. A lot of people are saying, hey, you know, your polling numbers are falling. In fact, you only have an approval rating of 42%, just 2% above your lowest point. What's tomorrow going to be? I caught this article over at The Hill that caught my attention. You know, the good journalism people there. And look, I'm sure there are probably some decent people there. But look, when they put out their top 10 questions and, you know, you're in your top 10 is things like, are we going to boycott the Olympics? Or, you know, the drug enforcement agencies, their operational division, respecting people's constitutional rights, or Snowden, or any number of the things that they laid out. You know, are you going to veto any spending bills that doesn't have spending cuts? You know, Bernanke, you know, are you going to change the name of the Washington Redskins? You know, I don't think the majority of Americans really, that's not on the front of their minds. That's not on the tip of their tongues. I think the vast majority of people are going, you know, hey, you know, it took me a little longer to get to work today because the roads are bad. It took me a little bit longer to get to work today because, You know, there's no public transportation. It took me a little bit longer to get to work today because, you know, everything's under, you know, the city of Harrisburg, emergency construction. I'm worried about my kids getting health care. I'm worried about school not opening in the fall. I'm worried about all these other things, not this. And I guess when you're in this, you know, this Washington insider world, that's kind of where you end up. But I would like to, you know, I would like to go to these press conferences. Not, trust me, I'm never getting out. You've got to be one of the elite Washington journalism corp folks to get in and actually ask a real question, and that ain't going to happen. But I wish you could. And, you know, ask, you know, why is it that wages continue to stagnate and are going down, yet corporate profits are going up? Why is it we're still giving a huge handouts to these big corporations? Why is it that you went to Tennessee to Amazon to say, oh, this is the wave of the future, to a company that uses a vast majority, a huge number of temporary workers? Is that the direction we should be? Is that the country we want? I got a bunch of questions. Problem is, nobody's going to let me anywhere near someone to answer. Someone's going to answer them. But the president's going to go on vacation, which, you know, there's part of me that goes, you know, maybe we all need to take a little vacation, a little break from the heated rhetoric, from the back and forth and the battle, just maybe just a little bit. And over the weekend, our governor, you know, he decided that he wanted to go to the big race up in Pocono, to the Pocono Raceway, to see the 400-mile race where they, you know, they drive around making all left turns. And personally, you know, I'm a big fan of watching traffic. I did it for a number of years driving a truck. I don't know that I'd pay to go see it, but, you know, is what it is. But the governor needed to get from Hazleton to the racetrack. So, you know, he summons the state police helicopter. And they flew him in. And I love the rationale. You know, be honest with me. Say, you know what, the governor was there on official business. You know, and this is how we got him. We chose to get him there. Instead of saying, well, you know, we'll pay it's only a little bit of money. In fact, you know, the spokeswoman for the state police, Maria Flynn, said it was only about $155. Yeah. Except that doesn't really include the pilot's time or maintenance or any of that other stuff. But the spokesperson said, the spokeswoman said that the state police helicopter was assigned to traffic control. It was assigned to be there anyway. So, you know, hey, why not fly the governor in? I'm going, well, wait a second. If it was assigned to do something, then it wasn't assigned to fly the governor around, was it? And I love the statement she said. She said, we picked up the governor in Hazleton, flew him to the race. Logistically, it was easier and made more sense for our executive detail to fly him in because the helicopter was already supporting the Pocono race that weekend. And the significant traffic / gridlock around the track was a large factor in the planning as well. So basically, he didn't want to wait in traffic. And I got to be honest, there's part of me that goes, well, hold on. Hold on. I wouldn't mind. I'll pay the $155 to get me into the racetrack and fly over the traffic. And I think a lot of people would. I'd pay it anyway just to fly in. Thoughts? I mean, and you go, oh, well, that's such a small thing. No, it's the point of this. Because he's running around saying, you know, our state employees are coming up with ways to save money from the state and cutting back on state vehicle use and cutting back on leased space and, you know, achieving efficiencies and doing all this stuff. And yet here he is. Come on. It is what it is. I know it's only $155, which I guess I really have to point of order. $155. How long was he at the race? I know it was going to be there anyway. That's the rationale. But look, the reality is while you're saying we need to be cutting, what are you doing? So he started his vacation on Sunday with the big race. The shooting happens in Ross Township, and I'm sure you've all heard about the insaniac who went in and shot through the wall and shot and killed a number of people. Junk man. Our governor has not been heard on the subject. And there was a Pocono Record editorial page written about this. He said, hey, Pat Toomey came out and, you know, immediately said, hey, our condolences. Matt Cartwright, Democrat from one of our listening areas who we've had on the program a number of times, he was right out there immediately saying, hey, you know, can we have a public vigil? You know, all of this stuff. Can we reach out to the families? But aside from that, it's been nothing. In fact, our governor, who, according to the Pocono Record, hasn't said a word, and I've yet to see anything, and I usually get his press releases, and I usually get stuff like that, but nothing. Nothing at all. Yet on Wednesday, yesterday, he went on his 3-day kayaking trip. And God bless him. You explore the Juniata River. It's good for tourism. He actually had a press release on tourism. Actually had a press release, something about him being the more jobs governor. But hey, he's out there doing the tourism thing. But here's my problem. Nobody seems to be picking up on it. To me, this is a huge story. This is government being attacked. And even the people from the area, Rosemary Brown, who is the state representative from that area, and Mario Scavello, who is a representative in that area, in the nearby area, according to the editorial page, they extended their condolences, yeah, on Facebook. And I'm going, is that how we now communicate? Now, according to this article, both of those representatives have issued other releases. You know, anything from, according to them, seminars on small games of chance, to assistance for veterans, all kind of stuff. But nothing on this. And you got to kind of step back and wonder why. I mean, I look at this, and here is a, from the reports that I've read about this guy, here's a guy who's been a stark raving loon for years. Threatened the sheriff's department. I love the response by the sheriff. Oh, well, I thought he was threatening us. I didn't realize he was going to go in and shoot people in the meeting. I thought he was just threatening us. And I go, you know, at some point, don't you go, we don't want crazy people to have a gun? Now, this all stems from the township taking this guy to the court and saying, hey, you know, you gotta clean up your mess. You can't have buckets of fecal matter inside and outside of your house. You just can't have huge buckets of this stuff laying around. Sorry. You can't have a junkyard in your front yard. And now his response is, well, you know, we've always collected. I'm a collector. Is that what a junk man is? A collector? Is that what a junkyard is? A collection? I guess in a very loose way, sure. Now the township determined that this guy was illegally disposing of sewage on his property. And they went through the channels. He could have alleviated this by cleaning the mess up. But no, it's so much easier to be a stark raving loon. And this is one of those moments where you go, I know, it's not guns that kill people, it's people who kill people. But the gun helps, and mental health, something we should be really looking into when it comes to guns, don't you think? Just a thought. Let's take a quick break, right back, stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Late Tuesday, the Pentagon reported that mandatory furlough days for Department of Defense employees will be reduced from 11 to 6. The reduction in furlough days was made possible thanks to extra savings in the budget identified by the Pentagon in the current fiscal year. That means the majority of civilian defense employees will see their last forced furlough next week. The announcement means that teachers employed by the Defense Department will no longer be required to take a single furlough day when classes start at the end of this month. Labor unites with Citizen Trade Campaign and students against TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Doug Cunningham reports.
The ugly, grim reality of free trade export factories' brutal exploitation of workers is prompting the Teamsters and other groups to call for the U.S. to suspend TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa.
Vietnam should not be rewarded for its bad behavior, and especially should not be allowed to participate in the TPP. Now, that's why the Teamsters are joining with the Citizens Trade Campaign, the Communication Workers of America, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Unite Here, the Carpenters Union, United Students Against Sweatshops, to call for the suspension of trade discussions until Vietnam ends the abuses and lets people join unions and stop the discrimination.
Scott Nova, Executive Director of the Worker Rights Consortium, says the abuses in Vietnam export factories serving brands like Nike, Converse, and others include forced labor, child labor, physical beatings, and gender discrimination. Workers can't join unions other than the Communist Party-dominated VGCL.
In 2011, even a representative of the country's official labor union called wages in Vietnam's export factories, quote, shockingly low, unquote. Today, the unfortunate truth remains that made in Vietnam is largely synonymous with sweatshop labor. In our experience at the Worker Rights Consortium, to the extent that the response of global corporations and trading partners to those countries is to reward those countries by putting more business into the country, the countries get exactly the message you would expect them to get, which is that they should keep doing what they're doing.
An unfair labor practice strike by Mobile Rail Solutions workers in Chicago has entered its eighth day. The workers are seeking representation by the Industrial Workers of the World, and they accuse the company of firing three employees who had been actively organizing. The workers are seeking pay and benefits comparable to similar companies in the rail industry. The strike is intended to push the company to address ongoing safety concerns and reinstate the fired workers. A petition has been filed by the workers with the National Labor Relations Board seeking an election.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News.
What keeps you up at night, Governor? What part of all of those worries concerns you the most? The cuts, the tax cuts?
Well, usually I wake up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I wonder where we are going to balance the budget. We have a pension crisis, just like every other state just about has a pension crisis.
You've had success. I want our viewers to know you've balanced two previous budgets, if not more. Right. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you've closed deficit holes of more than $4 billion. You've had success.
I guess that depends on what your definition of success is. I mean, if you're balancing budgets off the backs of those least able to afford it, did you really do anything noble? If you've taken, what now, $3 billion from public education, if you've kicked 41,000 working people off of adult basic health care, 89,000 kids off a CHIP, if you've done all of these things, I don't know that that's the way I want balance budgets, if they are truly balanced. And I see now that as I've been talking about for a while, House Majority Policy Committee Chairman Dave Reed's going around the Commonwealth saying, oh, we want to see what poverty looks like, even though the very policies that his governor, or actually our governor, unfortunately, but his party's been pursuing has made poverty that much worse. And all of those things I just said, that's made poverty worse in this state. I wonder if the good chairman understands that. Or if this is what I truly believe it is, just a scam, just marching orders from above, from people outside of the state saying, you know, we really want to go after those poor people and destroy food stamps and destroy more of the safety net. That's my view on it. Anyway, I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Pat Harkins to come talk to us about the grand poverty tour, and if the Republicans have reached out to him. Pat, thanks for taking time for us.
Good evening, Rick. It's great to be with you again.
So I look at the Empowering Opportunities Gateways Out of Poverty tour that Chairman Reed is running around on. Has he asked you to help? I know Erie has a pretty sizable large percentage of people that live in poverty. Has he asked?
No, in fact, I have caller ID, and I've checked my caller ID religiously every day since hearing about this fictitious tour. And the other thing that galls me is they talk about their participating in a poverty simulator. If they need to see poverty at its finest, they should come to the First District in Erie that I represent proudly and see firsthand what these people go through who want to get a job but can't, and the opportunities are not here for employment.
Yeah, I always love when wealthy people try and act poor. Oh, we're gonna have a party game. Oh, we're gonna play poor for an hour. Like that's somehow gonna be able to give them any sense of what the working poor in our country go through.
Even on the lead-in, when I heard the governor say that he awakes at 3 a.m. every night worrying about how he's going to balance the budget, I'm not buying that. I think that's a crock. I think he sleeps pretty well. I think the oil and gas industry takes pretty good care of him, and he probably sleeps like a baby.
Yeah, I mean, especially when he's out kayaking. Got the big 3-day kayak tour. Still hasn't said a word about what went on, as far as I can tell. The news media reports have been he hasn't said a word about the shooting in Ross Township. But kayaking, very important.
Yeah, how sad that was, and you would think that he would step up to the plate and at least, observe some respect and some dignity for those people that perished in that, and that was a tragic event.
But I look at this, and I go back to this whole sham of a poverty tour, and it's my view that it's gonna devolve into what I expect it to be, which is, you know, the people are just lazy, they don't want to work, and the government programs are too generous. Because Representative Reid has already said, you know, if we split up the $1 trillion a year we spend on this, we could give each poor person $87,000 a year, which is literally a crock.
Yeah.
It's a nice talking point, but it's not reality, Representative.
No, and they always preach about you should pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, but these people are the ones that have taken away the boots even.
And I look at this and I go, you know, it's got us focused. And even here at the program, we're focused on defending programs to help the most vulnerable. And our focus isn't on where it should be. You want to focus on welfare? Focus on the welfare that we give to the Range Resources and the frackers and Wall Street and these huge multinational, multi-state corporations. Focus on that. That's where the real waste, fraud, and abuse is. That's where the real welfare is at.
And that's the thing is, you have almost like a reverse Robin Hood. The Republican strategy for poverty reduction since the Welfare Reform Act of the mid-90s has been not only to take away the boots and trading them for corporate welfare, but also demonizing the impoverished, making them out to be the bad guys.
You know, Representative, her name was... Oberlander, I'm sure you know who she is.
Yes.
She said that she'd read a study that said, you know, in order to have a living wage, to make a living in the Commonwealth, you'd have to make something like $22 an hour. And she's like, well, where could you find a job making $22? Where could you find a job making that kind of money? And I'm going, well, you know, basically what you've done is you've made it that much harder to find it by going after people's ability to organize, going after prevailing wage, going after the things that help raise wages and help workers to reap the rewards of their work.
Hey, and don't think for a minute that these people don't want right to work and they're not ready to take us down that path. It's just that there are still some sensible, reasonable Republicans who are putting a stop to that. But jobs should be number one when we go back in the fall. And I still am convinced they're gonna rehash and retread the selling the state stores, selling the lottery, all the stuff that means nothing, and it's just Corbett throwing a bone to a campaign contributor.
How is it now they can go back and I mean, I got to be honest, having seen the numbers that just came out, the profit numbers for the wine and spirit shops, how can you now come back and say we should hock this off after record profits and record revenue?
That's the number one thing I hear from people in my district. People say, is this guy crazy? You know, what drives this governor that we have to cut funding for education and cut all these social programs and at the same time give the corporate welfare, but then to go into these hokey ideas and to keep this thing going with the lottery? I mean, everybody thought in February, my goodness, it's over, let's move on. But this guy just keeps, it's like that whack-a-mole game. He just keeps bringing it up, we beat it down, and it comes back up. he defies logic.
I mean, it doesn't. And the reality is what's the name? Camelot Global. They've given us the ninth extension, but we won't give you another one until the 10th comes and the 11th, because they know if they get a hold of it, they can rob us blind.
You know, it's become laughable. It's to prop up, financial interests of people that he's friends with. And another straight one for you here, Rick, is none of us in the legislature really have ever dealt with this guy. I met him once, and I put my hand out to shake, and he turned the other way. So he's not a negotiator. He's not a wheeler and dealer. Not that he has to be an Ed Rendell, who was a people person, but this guy's got no people skills, no social skills. He's an embarrassment.
Well, that's why I call him Punxsutawney Tom. You know, every once in a while, he pokes his head out, causes some trouble, and then bails back in. Off doing his kayaking right now. I'm sure at our expense. On Sunday, took the helicopter. Taking the state police helicopter. Little spin. Don't want to sit through traffic. Wouldn't you love to go to the races and have a helicopter drop you off right there?
And he gets on other people using state vehicles.
Yeah.
And he's out buying new SUVs for himself, Lieutenant Governor, and his wife, and Lieutenant Governor's wife.
The Lieutenant Governor, didn't he get a new swimming pool?
Oh, I didn't know about that. I didn't get the invite.
That was almost right at the beginning of the term. They it was like $12,000 or $13,000 they put into a swimming pool there at the Lieutenant Governor's residence.
But we don't have any money for mandatory kindergarten. That's
no,
my
no.
Bill.
Well, yeah, understand, kindergarten, those kids don't need it.
No. They call it over-glorified babysitting.
Yes.
But if it's their child that's neglected, boy, does that get changed quickly.
You know, and I look at this, and I want to bring this back to the Empowering Opportunities Gateways Out of Poverty initiative put forth by Chairman Dave Reed of the House Republican Policy Committee. You look at those things, you know, pre-K programs, full-day kindergarten programs, that help poverty. Medicaid expansion would help with poverty. Putting the $3 billion they stole from education back into K-12 education, giving kids an opportunity, those are things that could help end poverty. I don't see them proposing any of this stuff.
No, and until we fix the structures in society that lead to poverty and to stop trying to relieve poverty under an individual's responsibility framework, which is definitely what the Republican plan it looks like, we're not going to relieve anything. And it's so separated and so marginalized, they don't understand. They're not in their districts and seeing every day what people are going through. That's why they have to have a simulator.
You know, what's interesting to me is, as Chairman Reed said back on July 15th during his press conference, that, you know, it's you know, people fall into poverty because they made, you know, one bad decision. And I took on to that, and I assume that the vast majority of people who are in poverty, the decision they made was, you know, picking door number one or door number two before they were born. Because they didn't choose the right parents. They didn't do enough research to pick the right parents.
And forget health issues or anything like that that comes up. That never factors in.
So let me ask you, you know, as Democrats, what are the proposals that you guys are going to come up with to say, you know what, if you truly want to end poverty, this is the direction we go. Where do we start? You know, to me, you know, they're throwing all this stuff out there, but the response, I think there has to be a response to it by saying, you're not doing anything except having a show. This is what will solve poverty. Where do we go?
Well, I think you're right, and Democrats, I think, are afraid of challenges because if they come out against individual responsibility, they're accused of being anti-capitalist. And the last big-time politician who had the guts enough to challenge this was Teddy Roosevelt. And in his Square Deal speech, he talked about, you know, how there's an appropriate balance between protecting corporate interests so the economy can thrive and making sure that those at the bottom have adequate potential for upward mobility. In the House, we're down 20 votes, and I really don't think that the Republicans care what we think. You saw what they did the Saturday before the budget was passed.
Yeah.
When Representative Reed was there with another rep, and I can't think of his name, but they were all upset because the transportation bill had failed, and we were supposed to deliver 80 votes for them, and they were counting on us, and so we were the bad guys. And I think the public started to see there, and I hope this is the beginning of the unraveling of them, you know, that this is their mantra. This is let the Democrats do their dirty work, and they just want to get voted back in and not deal with anything controversial.
But the Democrats, I mean, and nothing against you, but you have no power.
No.
They have steamroller control. They have absolute totalitarian control, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah, and we're our own worst enemy sometimes. We had people that sided with them on that liquor bill. Three votes went over their way, and it was astounding. It was, you know, I scratched my head when I left that night, and I thought, what are these people thinking?
It's amazing. But out of this tour, I think there has to be a strong Democratic side to this, saying, you know what, you want to solve problem poverty? Here's a five-point plan. One, we raise the minimum wage. We reward work. If you're working 40 hours a week, you should be nowhere near the poverty line. We should expand Medicaid expansion so that, you know what, people get health care when they need it. We fund pre-K programs. We fund education. We put money into transportation so people can get to work and back. There are so many things we should be doing that it's not being focused on because I think they're sucking the air out of the room.
And we can solve it early by investing heavily in quality early childhood education. But there again, they talk the talk. They joined a pre-K start caucus that I started overwhelmingly 2 years ago. But when it comes time to vote, I watch that board and you see the red and the green votes. It's all Democrats that are for and all Republicans that are against. And then when they come into my district and they're talking about funding education, it's almost like, hey, there's a church across the street. Why don't you go use the confessional?
Exactly.
Where do their loyalties lie?
And that's a good question. Where do their loyalties lie?
And they talk about the teachers union being the bad guy and everything, but it's been proven that we can work together and we can get somewhere and we can advance the cause, but it's so polarized, it's almost like we're not going to get anywhere with this current setup.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, Pat. You know, I look at this, and there's one thing that I agreed with Ronald Reagan on. The best anti-poverty program is a jobs plan.
Exactly.
And what I have not seen come out of Governor Corbett and the Republicans who control our state and the Republicans on the national level who are holding our country hostage is any idea of how to move us forward on a jobs plan. I cannot believe that you guys went home, that the Republicans recessed and went home without a transportation bill. I cannot imagine that they would have the audacity, the gall, the temerity to say, we've done our job, we're going home, leaving that undone.
We were stunned also, and I was just going to bring that up. We could have done that properly, and we could have done it not on the backs of the truck drivers and the people that use gas every day. I was against it for many, many reasons. There were so many parts of the bill that nobody understood it, and nothing was explained to us. And again, it goes back to no leadership from the governor. It's a rudderless ship. But we had no sense of what was in that bill, and we were asked to vote on it. And I was hearing from constituents who said a 28 cents a gallon regular gas and 38 cents a gallon tax on diesel. There was no way I was going to do that. We could have floated a bond issue where the interest rates are so low now, you'll never get borrowing rates any lower. We wouldn't have had to go down the path of raising fees and everything else. But these people wanted, they just wanted a show. They just wanted to put something forward real quickly so that when Corbett runs next spring, he could say that he did something. That's not what I'm there for. I'm there to do it right and do it right the first time.
You talk about floating a bond issue. You know, because that's something that I've been saying for the longest time. Money right now is so cheap internationally. We should be investing heavily in upgrading all of our infrastructure. We just finished a 9,600-mile cross-country labor history tour. We went from one part of this country to the other and back, all up and down the coasts. And I saw a lot of blight. I saw a lot of devastation. I saw a lot of opportunity for us to invest and to get people back to work, rebuilding our nation. But there doesn't seem to be the will on the right to do that. Nor, I've got to be honest, with some on the left as well.
And you look at the nation, like you say, you look at Baltimore. You take the train from Philly to Harrisburg. You see it looks like a bombed-out area of a third-world country. You look at Detroit, and you see all what's going on with them.
We were there.
You know, we can rebuild Iraq, but we can't do anything for the United States. That totally baffles me.
And I look at this, and I go back to the unemployment compensation bill that you guys that you fought against, you know, in the back when Scott Perry, our now congressman, was in the state house, that, you know, screwed working people. gave a nice tax break to employers and basically took the burden off of employers that they had created. But they floated a pretty sizable bond to take care of the bill that we owed the federal government. Didn't have a thought about saddling the taxpayers with that, because, you know, hey, the employers benefited from it. But floating a bond to invest in roads and bridges and infrastructure and things for the future of the Commonwealth, that has a problem?
As the saying goes, follow the money. It's interesting when you do see the pinnacles that some of these things have. The bond council, who gets the money? The bankers, who are the big contributors, who's being rewarded, who's being penalized. It's a frustrating situation, a lot of that.
It's just mind-blowing. And I look at this empowering opportunities nonsense. It's a scam as far as I'm concerned. But you know what? I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, I generally don't like to assault people's character. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's never seen poverty, and this is an opportunity, and hopefully there will be an epiphany at the end of this where he will truly turn around having seen the light and come on to some of the things that we've talked about.
I'd just be curious if he attends anything in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, or Erie. I haven't seen either one of those, any one of those cities on the map as far as their worldwide tour or their statewide tour.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath because there are other people there.
Right.
Insane stuff. Pat, I give you nothing but the credit, man. I couldn't do your job, nor would I want to do it, because I think I would strangle a good number of your colleagues.
I knew what I signed up for, and it's a challenge, but I'll face it as long as people want me. I'll stay in there and keep up the fight.
Keep the fight for us, brother. I appreciate the time, man.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend, Pennsylvania State Representative Pat Harkins. Quick break, back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Love the talk.
I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watch you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Question: is making higher education available to every American more important to our national interest than letting Wall Street profiteers make a few more billions of dollars each year? Answer: of course. Yet, our political leaders, pushed by Wall Street lobbyists, have been making the opposite choice for years. As a result, banksters have loaded students down with a mountain of high-interest loans, rising from just over $2 billion a decade ago to nearly $1 trillion last year. Worse, the financiers, either banks or government lenders, have become the gatekeepers of advanced education, shutting out thousands of young people wanting to get ahead but not able to hurdle the formidable financial barrier. This is enormously costly to America and completely unnecessary. The smart choice, as we learned from the GI Bill after World War II, would be to make college and professional training free. Universal access to higher education, i.e. free access, produces a very high return on the public's investment while also producing a widely shared prosperity and a broadly educated citizenry. Of course, an upfront investment in a smarter, more productive, more democratic civilization is pricey. So where do we get the money to do what America needs? Get it from where it went. Wall Street's super-rich speculators are now making millions of super-fast robotic financial transactions per second, generating trillions of dollars a year for them, but producing nothing of real value for us, while distorting and endangering markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, put a tiny tax on each of those automated gambles by speculators, and more than enough money will come into the public coffers to free up higher ed for all. For information, check out United States Students Association at www.usstudents.org. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Our quote for this hour comes from Pam. On one of the comments that I came across on this article at the New York Times, if you replace full-time $25 an hour factory jobs with $7.25 an hour part-time restaurant and retail jobs, the economy dies because no one can buy anything. It isn't that complicated. And you know, for me, I look at this grand poverty tour that the Republicans are going on because, hey, we want to see what poverty looks like. Never seen it before. You know, just to kick it off, we did an hour of playing poverty. So we know now it isn't that difficult. And I would love to talk to them and explain how you get out of poverty. It's called a job. Pretty simple. You give people opportunity to be able to support their families, and it happens. People work hard. People save money. People buy houses. The economy goes forward. Pretty simple stuff. But if you're taking those jobs that were family-sustaining jobs, and now we have Fast Food Nation, and thank you, Ronald Reagan, service-based economy, this is what you end up with. And as I look at this over the last 50 years, we have seen the decoupling of wages from productivity, and really since the Reagan years, the decoupling of the more work I do, the more money I make isn't there anymore. That meritocracy, not there. In fact, broken during the Reagan years, while they were focusing on the idea of, well, we need a meritocracy. I mean, really, think about it. If you look at the graph from the end of World War II up until the Reagan years, as productivity steadily climbed, wages kept pace with it. So the more output, the more wealth being created, the more the working class, the more they were able to share in that wealth. This is not rocket science. This doesn't take a genius to figure it out. Pretty simple. During the Reagan years, because of the policies put forth by the sainted one, that decoupling happened. Productivity continued to climb. In fact, skyrocketed. Wages flattened, deadlined, bang, gone. In fact, have been going down for 30 years. And I look at the fact that in 1988, when I started working in the freight industry, I was making $15 an hour working on a shipping dock as a casual. Now, that wage went up to, like, I think it was 19-something an hour for the full-time guys. But as a casual, I was making $15 an hour. Right now, casuals working on freight docks, making between $11.50 and $12.50 an hour. That's not adjusted for inflation. There's no calculation that goes into it. No calculus, no arithmetic, no geometry, none of that stuff. Just dollar for dollar. 1988, $15 I was making. Today, $11.50 to $12.50. Now that's a lot of years. That's 25 years. So in 25 years, inflation has continued to go up. The cost of living continues to go up. Cost of everything continues to go up. Wages have gone backwards for working people in this country. So you say, wow, you poverty people, you need to get a job. And well, you know what? The first job I got was working in a warehouse, throwing boxes, working my butt off. The wages haven't kept up, folks. So if you're really concerned about poverty, if poverty is your focus, first thing you got to do is you've got to figure out how to get wages to rise. And you do that in one of a couple of different ways. You create a higher minimum wage, or You figure out how to increase the demand for labor, which I've always said I believe government should be the employer of last resort. There should be no welfare, no food stamps, none of those handout programs, nothing. It should be jobs plans. If you can't get a job in the private sector, we will find you something to do. Because I believe there is a therapeutic quality to work where people at the end of the day go, you know what, I accomplished something today. And that's so important. The problem is you get into a lot of communities where work is not there. And where I grew up as a kid wasn't there. We weren't on the bus line. People didn't have cars. You struggled to get that job. So in my view, those are the obstacles we should be looking at. And you look at this New York Times editorial piece, and they point out pretty much what I just said. Had the minimum wage kept pace over the last 50 years, had the minimum wage kept pace with inflation, it'd be over $10 an hour. And had it kept in line very conservatively with productivity, it would be over $17. I've seen reports as high as $23 an hour. Now, that's if you'd kept those jobs here in the U.S. And for me, a lot of it comes back down to our trade policy. But you go through this and you look at the fact that the McDonald's of the world, the fast food restaurants, the retail, the service-based economies that Reagan swept into office saying we were going to be a service-based economy. Well, here we are. And the vast majority of those jobs pay between, you know, $8 and $11 an hour. I'm sorry, you can't possibly raise a family on them. And so you're seeing all of these fast food workers who are saying, you know, enough already. We want a decent wage. We want $15 an hour. And you got the right wing going, wow, why don't you just get $100 an hour? McDonald's themselves is $15 an hour is what you need to live in this country, what you need to exist. They had them and their website with Visa. Came out and said, you know, this is what it is. A full-time job at McDonald's plus a full-time job somewhere else. Now, the argument that the right makes is, well, we shouldn't raise the minimum wage because all those fast food jobs, those are just kids anyway. Well, according to a report that just came out from the Center for Economic and Policy Research, kind of throws little cold water in the face of that. What they find, the largest share of fast food workers between 25 and 54 years old. The teenagers, not so much. They didn't make up a big portion of the workforce. But we like to believe it is, right? The reality is only 11% of the workforce were less than 20 years old. So that argument that, well, they're just teenagers, it's a bunch of bunk. And you look at the argument against the minimum wage, because I've been saying, you know, $15 an hour seems like a reasonable minimum wage. Seems like a reasonable wage to be working at McDonald's. And I heard someone tell me, well, no, the price of a McDonald's would go through the roof. No one could ever afford to eat there. Well, I look at the minimum wage in Australia. And the minimum wage in Australia is $14.50 an hour. And they've also, having organized, have negotiated themselves a 15% raise by 2016. Now, in Australia, there are about 900 McDonald's there. Very profitable. In fact, in Europe, where the minimum wage is even higher than that, the profit margins by the company-owned restaurants are higher in Europe than they are in the U.S. France, for instance, has a minimum wage of $12 an hour. They've got 1,200 locations, still more profitable than in the U.S. And you go, but Rick, the price of a Big Mac's got to be through the roof. It's got to be just prohibitively expensive because, you know, it's so much, paying so much out in wages. Well, okay, in Australia, a Big Mac costs $4.62. In the Eurozone, it costs $4.66. On average here in the U.S., a Big Mac costs $4.56. So the Australians paid cents more. In the Eurozone, they paid 10 cents more. Let me ask you just a question. If the person serving you your hamburger if the person serving you at the counter, you knew they were making a decent wage, you knew they weren't taking government programs, needing government programs to survive, is it worth 6 to 10 cents for you? I would also argue that by having the McDonald's of the world paying a reasonable wage and not having employees who need Medicaid and who need food stamps and LIHEAP and all of the other things, if they could pay their own bills, it would lower our tax bills. And thus, we would save that 6 to 10 cents for the Big Mac. Well, we would save that in multiple numbers. What's interesting to me is, I saw this bit of data on McDonald's that pointed out that in the U.S., McDonald's spends about 25% of its expenses on workers. So about a quarter of the is on workers. Maybe 30, 35% possible as well. Worldwide, what they came across is that 45% of the expenses on labor costs. And yet the company is still reporting near record profits. So, I got to be honest, all of the rhetoric, all of the BS that they keep throwing us, it doesn't hold up to scrutiny. It doesn't hold up to the light of day. And what frustrates me is that on some level, we've got to be looking at these big multinational corporations and saying, you know what, you can't have a business model based on government handouts. You can't base your business model on subsidies from we the people. And then still tell us that we're a capitalist country and people are competing, because they're not. They're figuring out how to screw up the game. And you go, well, it's just how it is. What I find really interesting, though, and I don't know if you saw this story, Bloomberg News had this story that the franchisees, the people who own the McDonald's restaurants, of which, you think that you're going to a McDonald's, it's owned by McDonald's. No. It's 90% of them are owned by different people. You get a guy who owns two or three or five of them in an area, or a little corporation who owns a couple of them. The McDonald's name doesn't. They franchise them out. And good luck getting one. You and I, we could never get one. Well, maybe you could. I don't have $750,000 of personal resource sitting in the bank that's mine and mine alone. Now, Taco Bell requires a million, Burger King a million and a half, so good luck starting one of those, too. So we could never do this. But what the franchisees are now complaining is, and they're now organizing, because they're saying, McDonald's, it's not a profitable business. It's not as profitable as it used to be. We used to really, really be profitable. Now, not so much profit, not as profitable. So they're having these meetings. They're organizing. The owners are organizing against McDonald's. So think about this for a second. You've got the franchisees, the guy who owns the restaurant, organizing against the CEOs and the executives of McDonald's, while the workers are organizing against both of them. Because the guy at the top, and this is what I keep saying, you say, what's the difference between rich and wealthy? Rich is a guy, rich is Shaquille O'Neal. Wealthy is the guy who wrote Shaquille O'Neal the checks. Same dynamic here. Rich is the guy who owns the store. Wealthy people sitting in those corporate offices, the ones who hold the keys to the kingdom. And what I find amazing is that the franchisees are beginning to organize too, because too much of what's being created at the bottom is being sucked up by that very, very small, very small number at the top. And that's not just at McDonald's. It's all across this country in every industry. And I look at this and I go, to me, this is a great example of what's going on in this country. Because what the ones at the top are doing, well, they're pitting the workers against the guys who own the store. The guy at the store is saying, hey, I'm squeezed because the guy above me he's extorting me, because evidently they used to charge 8.5% of the revenue for rent and for other things. That had whatever 8.5% used to go to the McDonald's brand. So if I owned a McDonald's, 8.5% of what I took in went to them. Evidently, that's gone up to 12%. And they're going, hey, you know, we want that other 3.5% back. And my question is, if they get the other 3.5% back, does that filter down to the employees? And this is where I think the employees should have the right to organize, join and form unions, to sit down and say, these are the books. This is what's being paid to the corporation. This is what's being paid here and there and everywhere. And this is what our share of it should be, which is why I'm a huge believer in collective bargaining. Which is why I'm a firm believer in the right to join and form unions, whatever they look like, associations, unions, guilds, whatever. But to have that power to say, you know what, we're the ones creating this wealth. We're the ones who are doing the work every day. We're the ones flipping the burgers and sweeping the floors and taking care of the customers. We're the smile. Even though I can't put food on my table at home and I can't take care of my family and my responsibility, I still come to this place and I smile at the customer every day and I serve them with a smile. Sometimes if it's not busy, I'll go into one of these McDonald's and I'll just talk to somebody behind the counter. What are things like here? You know, have you seen the story of the guy over on the other side of town who was exploiting those J-1 students? And without exception, you get people who are like, you know, I love what I do. I love dealing with the people. I love working here, but I'm struggling. And for me, I hope this Fast Food Forward campaign, this whole push of organizing for these low-wage workers, because I think it's good for the country. I think it's good for all workers. If the folks who are the ones at the bottom of the economic scale, if they're moving upward, if they're sharing in the wealth that they create, it's only good for all of us. And the other part of this is once they have disposable income, they spend it too. And that means that the next rung up, they get a little bit more work and a little bit more and a little bit more, and you have activity. See, I mean, it just seems it's that simple as far as I'm concerned. But it's going to take us siding and standing and getting out into the streets and pushing. Not some sham of a poverty tour like we're seeing coming out of Chairman Reid and the Republicans now. Oh, we now care about poverty. How about solving it? And the best way to do that, jobs. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, going to talk a little bit about education. You want to get out of poverty? Education, that's the way to go. Quick break, right back.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Smith.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Late Tuesday, the Pentagon reported that mandatory furlough days for Department of Defense employees will be reduced from 11 to 6. The reduction in furlough days was made possible thanks to extra savings in the budget identified by the Pentagon in the current fiscal year. That means the majority of civilian defense employees will see their last forced furlough next week. The announcement means that teachers employed by the Defense Department will no longer be required to take a single furlough day when classes start at the end of this month. Labor unites with Citizen Trade Campaign and students against TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Doug Cunningham reports.
The ugly, grim reality of free trade export factories' brutal exploitation of workers is prompting the Teamsters and other groups to call for the U.S. to suspend TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa.
Vietnam Vietnam should not be rewarded for its bad behavior, and especially should not be allowed to participate in the TPP. Now, that's why the Teamsters are joining with the Citizens Trade Campaign, the Communication Workers of America, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Unite Here, the Carpenters Union, United Students Against Sweatshops, to call for the suspension of trade discussions until Vietnam ends the abuses and lets people join unions and stop the discrimination.
Scott Nova, Executive Director of the Worker Rights Consortium, says the abuses in Vietnamese export factories serving brands like Nike, Converse, and others include forced labor, child labor, physical beatings, and gender discrimination. Workers can't join unions other than the Communist Party-dominated VGCL.
In 2011, even a representative of the country's official labor union called wages in Vietnam's export factories, quote, shockingly low, unquote. Today, the unfortunate truth remains that made in Vietnam is largely synonymous with sweatshop labor. In our experience at the Worker Rights Consortium, to the extent that the response of global corporations and trading partners to those countries is to reward those countries by putting more business into the country, the countries get exactly the message you would expect them to get, which is that they should keep doing what they're doing.
An unfair labor practice strike, Mobile Rail Solutions workers in Chicago has entered its eighth day. The workers are seeking representation by the Industrial Workers of the World, and they accuse the company of firing three employees who had been actively organizing. The workers are seeking pay and benefits comparable to similar companies in the rail industry. The strike is intended to push the company to address ongoing safety concerns and reinstate the fired workers. A petition has been filed by the workers with the National Labor Relations Board seeking an election.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Keeps on raining,
check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So some interesting developments going on down in Philadelphia as the school district evidently is saying that they don't have the money to open this fall. $50 million, no money, no open. How is that possible? I'm not quite sure. Here to help us work through this is Rebecca Poyaro. She is a parent of students in the Philadelphia School District. Rebecca, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I look at this, you know, $50 million, we don't get it, we don't open. What's that?
Well, it's interesting. I'm of a couple of minds about it. I actually like that the superintendent came out and made a principled stand that if schools aren't safe and staffed well enough to create a safe and nurturing environment for our kids, then we can't open them. I mean, I think that's absolutely right. You can't open a school if you don't have enough teachers and nurses and assistant principals and aides and everybody that makes a school run. So, you know, I'm glad for that. $50 million, I think he should have asked for $100 million. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. The whole last few months of the budget quarrel between Harrisburg and the city government of Philadelphia was, you know, Mayor Nutter just as bad as Tom Corbett, in my opinion. So, I'm glad that the superintendent made that statement, but I would distance myself from him and from Mayor Nutter, for example, trying to put the blame on the teachers. They're trying to make the teachers shoulder the responsibility for this huge funding gap when, frankly, it's obviously the huge cuts in the state level and the lack of responsibility shown at the city level as well.
So Mayor Nutter is blaming the teachers, though?
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm sure the Republicans, I guess that's the easy scapegoat, though. It's because, you know, here in Harrisburg, the teachers took a 5% pay cut. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, the local media is saying, oh, teachers get a lesson in math in subtraction. And I'm going, well, you know, is that what we've devolved into? Everybody now blames the teacher because they won't work for free?
Right. Yeah, no, it's really ugly and it's disgusting, and, you know, I'm exhausted and every other parent is exhausted too. We've been trying to lobby as hard as possible since, what, April, May? I don't even remember. For the last 3 years, really, since the first Corbett education cuts. And, you know, you're supposed to kind of recoup over the summer. Everybody is. And we're just all exhausted and angry. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, is there going to be a school for my kids to walk into? I try and push that to the side. You try and do what you can politically and as a sort of firewall against it. But then, you know, at the end of the day, you come up to it like, what will my kids walk into, if anything, in September? And that's just hard to deal with.
Do you know where our governor is?
I don't want to know. Is he?
He's kayaking.
Oh, good.
I'm glad that, you know, he's having fun. I mean, because, you know, I don't know if you know, but the Republicans are on a giant statewide poverty tour. And I look at what we're talking about right here. This is their policy. This is their directive. This is what they've done. This is creating more poverty, more headache, more heartache, more opportunity for strife and stress and all kind of stuff. Yet they're kayaking and holding cute little meetings and poverty simulation events and all kind of stuff like that, while very real world policy is making things worse in our Commonwealth, Rebecca.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. So, I mean, you know, right now we're in this, you know, horrible endgame where our mayor is cozying up to the governor and trying to give him cover, trying to make Tom Corbett out like he's given a package that's going to fund the schools. But honestly, what Corbett did was said, you guys can go and extend the sales tax in Philadelphia, probably one of the more regressive measures for raising money ever. And instead of putting it towards the pension crisis, which is a pretty big crisis in Philadelphia, you can use it for the schools. So that's not state money whatsoever. I mean, I'm sorry, that's not city money whatsoever. Listen to me, I'm just frazzled. That's not money coming from Harrisburg. That's the state saying, yeah, you can take this money, which you desperately needed to use for this other thing, and you can put that towards the schools. That's our solution for you. And Michael Nutter's giving him cover and saying, oh, yeah, here's the, you know, state solution, we're going to do this. Meanwhile, it's cannibalizing Philadelphia. And, you know, then Nutter turns around and says, well, the teachers have to give more than the state gave. I mean, the state's given, what, $2 million in gap-closing funding above what was put in the budget earlier on this year. I mean, that's nothing.
I mean, because to me, the result of this is a couple of things. First and foremost, it's the $3 billion that Corbett and the Republicans have taken away from K-12 education in the 3 years, in the three budgets that they put mm-hmm. forth. That's first and foremost.
Yeah.
Then it's this whole push towards dividing and splitting public education up to try and privatize it. All of this money that's gone into to charter schools and to all of these schemes that they've dreamt up over the years, that's the other part of this that I haven't heard anybody really talking about.
Well, sure, and you can look even at the decisions being made this summer by, you remember, Philadelphia is a state takeover district and is run by the SRC, which is appointed by the governor, as well as by the mayor, not by an elected school board, and of course, even in this budget crisis, they are making decisions to expand the charter sector and to expand seats at various schools to the cost that this year they got outside entities to give them grants to cover this. So they're saying, oh, no, it's not costing us anything in this moment. But they have put in this summer alone about $54 million in new costs over the next 5 years. For charter expansion and for the expansion of seats in schools that have been targeted by reformers as ones they want to expand, while the rest of the schools in the district don't even have the basics. So, you know, these games are being played even in the midst of this huge, you know, budget deficit crisis.
I got to be honest with you. I don't know how, as a parent, you're not just losing your mind. I mean, I would be...
Oh, I've lost it. I've really lost it. Yeah. No, I don't. I've lost my mind many times over this last year and this last 3 years.
So what's the response so far from the people that you deal with, the groups in Philadelphia and out of this? Because I can't imagine anybody's thrilled with Nutter's response.
They're angry. Parents are, I mean, you know, to put it bluntly, they're freaking out. I mean, they're just freaking out. They see through it. You know, I think the people in the Nutter's office, you know, they thought, yeah, we'll send the parents after the teachers' union. You know, they thought that was the strategy. Parents see through it. And frankly, there are some parents who are teachers, and there are parents who live in the same neighborhoods with teachers, and they can't, you know, they really thought they were going to divide and conquer, and it's not working. I mean, we see through it. We see you can't say, oh, you can't use the rhetoric of shared sacrifice when nobody's being asked to make any sacrifice except the teachers, the kids, and their families.
So what do we do? I mean, you know, it's not our district, but, you know, here's my view on this. At some point, it's going to be. At some point, they're going to starve education funding enough in this state that it's going to be my school district. It's going to be where my kids go to school. It's going to be in our listening area. I know it's easy to say, well, that's just a Philadelphia thing, and,
yeah,
you know, it's just them. But I got to tell you, Rebecca, I think this is all of us eventually. We're just going through to see the first round of what's going to happen to public education in this state in the future.
Right, we're the canary. Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest, I mean, which is obvious things that everybody has to do is get on board to get somebody in Harrisburg in the next gubernatorial election who is really pro-public education. And I don't mean corporate ed reform baloney. I mean somebody who cares about public education, understands that it is not supposed to be separate systems that resegregate children and provide funds to the charters and starve the district schools. I mean, I think, you know, that's just, we just have to look for a candidate who is really strong on education. I think even in these years that have been really horrible in terms of the funding for our schools, I think we've succeeded in making the issue of education so toxic that it is a big part of what has sunk Governor Corbett's ratings. And I think, you know, that's the biggest push. That's the only silver lining that I'm holding on to right now, tonight. I don't know. Do you have other ones?
No, I mean, aside from taking to the streets and seeing and getting all the kids and the parents and everybody out in the streets and marching themselves down to the mayor's office,
mm-hmm,
and here to Harrisburg and causing a ruckus, that's my view. My view is the more people in the streets, the better.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It was very hard, you know, that it happens over the summer. And that people are very exhausted. We were able to get parents to city council. It's hard to get parents from Philadelphia to Harrisburg. Over and over in the spring. But, you know, they wear you down and they keep it going through the summer. But, you know, frankly, if schools don't open in September, then, you know, there's going to be a lot of parents who have to take care of their kids. And I think we'll probably end up in City Hall.
Now, I'm hoping something happens. I mean, at the end of this, the push here is to restore all of the funding cuts to education that this governor has you know, saddled on our school districts. But, you know, until he's voted out of office, I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
Sad stuff. I appreciate the update on it. I got to be honest. You know, you got Nutter blaming the teachers, too. I guess that's just the easy way out, right?
Or it's, you know, the road to a consulting career post mayor. I don't know.
Maybe a Michael Nutter charter school.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I have no idea, but it's very painful.
Rebecca, I appreciate the time. Thanks for talking to us.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits, BBS Benefit Solutions, can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Question. Is making higher education available to every American more important to our national interest than letting Wall Street profiteers make a few more billions of dollars each year? Answer, of course. Yet, our political leaders, pushed by Wall Street lobbyists, have been making the opposite choice for years. As a result, banksters have loaded students down with a mountain of high-interest loans, rising from just over $2 billion a decade ago to nearly $1 trillion last year. Worse, the financiers, either banks or government lenders, have become the gatekeepers of advanced education, shutting out thousands of young people wanting to get ahead but not able to hurdle the formidable financial barrier. This is enormously costly to America and completely unnecessary. The smart choice, as we learned from the GI Bill after World War II, would be to make college and professional training free. Universal access to higher education, i.e. free access, produces a very high return on the public's investment while also producing a widely shared prosperity and a broadly educated citizenry. Of course, an upfront investment in a smarter, more productive, more democratic civilization is pricey. So where do we get the money to do what America needs? Get it from where it went. Wall Street's super-rich speculators are now making millions of super-fast robotic financial transactions per second, generating trillions of dollars a year for them, but producing nothing of real value for us, while distorting and endangering markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, put a tiny tax on each of those automated gambles by speculators, and more than enough money will come into the public coffers to free up higher ed for all. For information, check United States Students Association at www.usstudents.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
And you know, the sandwich comes at you, touch this, go pay the cashier, there's your sandwich. It's amazing.
Ho, 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 it's magic.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, you look at this, and is this part of the game plan? Is this the next chip to fall in the privatization scheme? Well, the defunding part of it absolutely is. And as I've been saying for the longest time, this is what we're going to see across the Commonwealth, and really across the country, as we're starving school districts of the ability to even open their doors. And then pointing the finger. And I love this. It's, you know, it's kind of like when the Republicans left in the last session to go home for their vacation and didn't pass the transportation bill. And then they turned and said, wow, those Democrats, they did it. Even though the Democrats have no power whatsoever. Nothing. They have no ability to influence anything in this Commonwealth right now. The Republicans have steamroller power. They have dictatorial control. Whatever they want, they get. It's that simple. Doesn't get any easier than that. So I look at this, and then you're going to go, well, their policy is to defund the schools. Schools say we can't open. Well, so what's the next thing to do? Blame the teachers. Because they won't work for free. And at some point, you know, teachers are going to go, hey, we're tired of being the whipping boys. We're tired of being the ones that are targeted every time. And let me ask you, I mean, because, you know, my daughter keeps saying, you know, I'd like to be a teacher, Dad. And Dad keeps going, no, you don't want that headache. Because the future of education, the way I'm seeing it, is if you're going to be a teacher, you're going to be the handmaidens of the wealth class. because only the very well-to-do in this country will be able to send their kids to school, and that's who teachers will teach for. Everybody else will have either an online thing with a computer program, or like they do in South Korea in some of the poorer neighborhoods, have actually robot computers that teach classes. You know, it's easier that way. And the teachers that will be around that are in public schools for the middle-income people, they're not going to make a decent living, and they're going to come and go, and they're going to be transient. This is what the right wants. This is what the wealth class wants. They want to make sure that they can train their little worker bees, but have people who aren't smart enough to fight back or stand up. Which is why we're seeing this whole, and all of this really is aimed at destroying the teachers' unions. Because heaven forbid you have workers that have some say. Heaven forbid you have teachers who can pay their own bills, can feed their own families. Heaven forbid. And I know, oh, they have gilded pensions and gold Cadillac health care and, oh, they make too much money. Nonsense. Nonsense. Stop it. Anyone who would say that, I would hope you're smarter than that. The reality is this is all a scheme to destroy and tear down public education and move to these profit centers. And you look in Philadelphia where they're doing a lot of this profit center stuff. A lot of these charter schools are propping up. But you know what? After some time, the workers there go, you know what? I think we've had enough beatings. I think we've been treated poorly enough. Maybe we want to try and do what teachers, you know, 30 years ago did, which is to organize and fight for a voice, which is what teachers and staff at the only charter high school, O-L-E-N-Y, only charter high school there in Philadelphia are trying to do. Only they're the company that runs them, Aspira Incorporated, Aspira. Well, they're doing what employers do, harassing, intimidating, threatening, interrogating, retaliation, because, well, the staffers just want to have some due process. They don't want to be fired without cause. They don't want to be disciplined without having a say in it. They'd like to be able to have a say in the curriculum. They'd like to have, well, I don't know, a say in what goes on in their day. But here again, you know, I look at what the Republicans are doing with this hearing on organizing. Oh, you know, those organizers, they're like stalkers. We've got to make that illegal. But employers being able to harass and intimidate and surveil and mandate, closed captive meetings, that's perfectly fine. And, you know, I look at this and I think of how much money that we're spending. Now, understand, this charter school, public money, our tax dollars that they're spending on union busting firms, tens of thousands of dollars, in a district that is talking about not even opening its doors because it doesn't have the money. I mean, stop and think about all of the insanity. You know, we used to understand that divide and conquer was a very successful tactic. Yet you look at what's going on in Philadelphia. What do you think they're doing? They're dividing education. They're dividing parents and teachers and students and schools. I mean, it's amazing on so many levels. And all in the means of privatizing. All, that's the end goal, privatizing and profitizing. And while the rest of the world is coming around to the reality that privatization not working, for instance, you know, in the UK, where they're finally coming around to the reality that it's not working, a recent poll released by Servation, commissioned by a group called We Own It, showed that people believe in public ownership of services, you know, education, healthcare. In fact, 4 out of 5 people thought that there should be a in-house bid when public services are put out to be hocked off. 60% think that local and national government should run public services in the public sector. Not private for-profit corporations. And look, I've been talking about this the last couple of days because, you know, we're talking about profitizing and privatizing the post office, which is a horrible idea on so many levels. But I think we've gotten it. The reality is it's not working. And like Ted Koppel said the other day, we're privatizing ourselves into one disaster after another. We've privatized the military and healthcare and education and all of this stuff, you know, privatizing water. You know, my wife and I had some cable, some TV stuff. You know, ever since we got back from our tour, our house is mad at us. Seems like everything is going wrong since we went back. The air conditioning, the electrical, the TV, all of it. Seems all that wants to be going. And, you know, it's one fire after another. And my wife's like, well, you know, they're going to put an extra box in. It's only going to be an extra dollar. And that's not bad after, you know, we've been married now, together 16 years now. And she's like, well, you know, in 16 years, that's not a lot. I go, whoa, what are you talking about? When we got this, it was $19.99 a month 16 years ago. It's now $72 a month. It has gone through the roof. She's going, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. Just because they're charging you just an extra dollar for another box, $6 instead of $5, does not mean they're keeping the price down. This, again, we've handed this over. Competition. Same thing with the Internet. Oh, competition. Oh, the competition will bring it down, give you better service. Yet you look at South Korea, where they actually have some competition. Just a thought. They've got internet speeds up to 200 times faster than we do. 200 times faster for half the cost. Customers in Hong Kong or Korea or parts of Europe, for that matter, they pay about $30 a month. That's it. You get a crummy plan in this country for $30 a month. And you can thank deregulation for that. Because you've got the big boys, the Comcasts, the Time Warners, the Verizons, the AT&T. No, we're not going to let that happen. There's no competition. Come on, get out of here. And look at what we've done to banking. We used to have some semblance of control over the banks. Had some competition. Gave up control, more deregulation. What'd we end up with? Boom, bust, 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 bust. And you could just go down the list. You can go down the prisons, and we've privatized prisons. What's it cost to keep somebody in prison nowadays? What, $40,000 a year? And we end up with these mandatory sentencing requirements for minor drug offenses. Who's that benefit? Oh, yeah, the profiteers. So, again, I ask. Show me something we privatize. Before we run off and we hock off the post office and before we let Corbett sell off the wine and spirit shops and before we let Corbett give away the lottery, show me something we've privatized that works better and is cheaper and better service oriented. Show me something. Because I'm sorry, I'm not seeing it. I mean, we've outsourced our military. We've outsourced our regulatory bodies. We've now got the very people who were supposed to be regulated, regulating themselves and saying, oh, they're doing a pretty good job until, bang, 93-foot hole in the ground over in Texas. At the end of the day, man, it's all about, and businesses think this way. And when you have business regulators, they think this way too. How much is an acceptable amount of damage and loss and degradation and pollution and destruction? How much is an acceptable amount compared to how much it would cost us to alleviate it? But, you know, you look at this and it's just one of those things that leaves you scratching your head, doesn't it? The question is, which side are you on? You on the people's side or are you on the profit side? personally, I'm on the people side because I'm actually a flesh and blood person. Unlike our corporate friends who never die. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Late Tuesday, the Pentagon reported that mandatory furlough days for Department of Defense employees will be reduced from 11 to 6. The reduction in furlough days was made possible thanks to extra savings in the budget identified by the Pentagon in the current fiscal year. That means the majority of civilian defense employees will see their last forced furlough next week. The announcement means that teachers employed by the Defense Department will no longer be required to take a single furlough day when classes start at the end of this month. Labor unites with Citizen Trade Campaign and students against TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Doug Cunningham reports.
The ugly, grim reality of free trade export factories' brutal exploitation of workers is prompting the Teamsters and other groups to call for the U.S. to suspend TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa.
Vietnam should not be rewarded for its bad behavior, and especially should not be allowed to participate in the TPP. That's why the Teamsters are joining with the Citizens Trade Campaign, the Communication Workers of America, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Unite Here, the Carpenters Union, United Students Against Sweatshops, to call for the suspension of trade discussions until Vietnam ends the abuses and lets people join unions and stop the discrimination.
Scott Nova, Executive Director of the Worker Rights Consortium, says the abuses in Vietnamese export factories serving brands like Nike, Converse, and others include forced labor, child labor, physical beatings, and gender discrimination. Workers can't join unions other than the Communist Party-dominated VGCL.
In 2011, even a representative of the country's official labor union called wages in Vietnam's export factories, quote, shockingly low, unquote. Today, the unfortunate truth remains that made in Vietnam is largely synonymous with sweatshop labor. In our experience at the Worker Rights Consortium, to the extent that the response of global corporations and trading partners to those countries is to reward those countries by putting more business into the country, the countries get exactly the message you would expect them to get, which is that they should keep doing what they're doing.
An unfair labor practice strike by Mobile Rail Solutions workers in Chicago has entered its eighth day. The workers are seeking representation by the industrial workers of the world, and they accuse the company of firing three employees who had been actively organizing. The workers are seeking pay and benefits comparable to similar companies in the rail industry. The strike is intended to push the company to address ongoing safety concerns and reinstate the fired workers. A petition has been filed by the workers with the National Labor Relations Board seeking an election.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News.
I will oppose the Columbia Free Trade Agreement. I want Congress to pass a set of trade deals. Send a message to Congress to come to an agreement on trade deals.
They're selling make-believe, and we don't buy that here. 'Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
Or in this case, they're bankrupting. And look, at the end of the day, whatever your excuse is about what happened to Detroit, our trade agreements, major part of it. Globalization, deindustrialization, the offshoring of good-paying manufacturing jobs, and the destruction of the American middle class, that's the reason Detroit's in the shape that it's in. It all comes back down to these horrible, insane trade deals, this neoliberal trade a regime that has taken hold of this country for the last 30, 40 years, and it's got to stop. But I don't see anytime soon, because we're talking about probably the mother load of bad trade deals in the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. Here to talk to us a little bit about that is Matthew Alexander. He's a policy analyst over at Economy in Crisis, economyincrisis.org, the website. Matthew, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
So I look at the situation in Detroit, and I lay blame flat at at our bad trade policy, at our horrible, abysmal trade policies.
Yeah, well, I think as with anything in the real world, you're going to find a lot of causes and a lot of effects, but you've got to talk about the big ones, and I think that's going to be part of it. We've seen the industrial base slowly wither away in a lot of areas. Of course, Detroit has probably gotten the worst of it.
You know, they say we've lost jobs. I don't think we've lost them. I think we know exactly where they are. They're in a lot of the countries where we've got all these one-sided trade deals. And I shouldn't even say that because, you know, it's one-sided for Wall Street.
Yeah, it's and that's the problem. Obviously, trade can be a good thing, but it's how you handle it. And we're in a lot of trade deals right now, which are good for some parties, not so good for others. The 1% makes off pretty well with a lot of these. But then you have a distortion in the market, which would not otherwise occur when you have some of the conditions we have in our trade policies, and someone's got to pay for it, and we know who that is.
Now, I asked you here to come talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement, and I know you probably don't know the details of it because, what, there's only about 600 lobbyists who get to know anything, and, you know, when we talked to Alan Grayson at Netroots Nation, he said that, you know, he's seen it, but he can't tell us anything about it. So what do we know at this point? What is it looking like from speculation, since we're not allowed to know, even though this president said it was going to be all about transparency?
Well, one thing you can know right off the bat is if they're doing it in secret, there's a reason for it. They always tell us if you're not doing anything wrong, there's nothing to hide. Well, we can send that right back at them. If you're not doing anything wrong, what are you hiding? The very fact that they're hiding something tells us that there's something in there that they don't want the public to see. And I believe Grayson himself said he can't talk about the details, but he said something to the effect of if we saw them, we'd be horrified. So that, you know, whatever the actual details turn out to be, and nothing is set in stone yet, but whatever the details turn out to be, we're not going to like it.
Well, I'm horrified by just the fact that I'm not allowed to know what's in it. That, to me, right from the start, huge red flag. And I don't care what side of the political divide you find yourself, whether you love Obama or you hate him. I want to know what it is because across the spectrum, it affects all of us.
Absolutely. And that's the big issue. Even if a good trade policy came out of this, I would still protest the way they went about doing it. And of course, a good trade policy is not going to come out of it. That's why it's being done in secret. We know who is sitting at the table, even if we don't know what they're agreeing to. And the people sitting at the table, of course, are the ones who are going to benefit. And we've seen this with warfare, people making a profit while other people pay the expenses. The same kind of people are sitting at that table. And I think that's what we're going to wind up with if something isn't done about it.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, in looking at the countries that are involved in this, you know, the Vietnams and such, is it possible to have a free trade agreement with them that isn't going to destroy jobs in this country?
Well, you know, that free trade is a difficult term because it means different things to different people. If you're talking about NAFTA,
yes,
free trade, no, that's going to be highly problematic, of course. One thing that concerns me is currency manipulation, which distorts the market. It makes it easy to buy their products coming in here. It makes it harder to buy our products going there. Now, that sounds all well and dandy. We get cheap goods. The problem is these other countries are subsidizing our consumption. That's not going to go on forever. So we get used to a lifestyle that's inflated, or some of us do, the ones with jobs, get used to a lifestyle that's inflated, and then all of a sudden, at some point, the rug's going to get pulled out from underneath us. So that's one, that's an example of one potential problem with this negotiation, especially those some of those countries in Asia do a lot of currency manipulation.
And the other part of this is what most people don't seem to understand, you know, the whole cheap good thing, not really good for us on a trade deficit level, or, because to me, I think, you know, we hear a lot about the the deficits in our budget and the debt, which, you know, are problematic on one level. But to me, the big deficit that I worry about more than anything is that trade deficit, because that means there's money going out of this country to around the world, and the dollar being the currency of the world. That money has to come back here in one form or another. And if we're not selling things to them, that means they're buying us. They're not buying our government. They're buying our corporations and breaking them down and shipping them over. So we're selling off. We're selling ourselves off.
Yeah, I think the problem here is how we come to it. Historically, there have been trade deficits that stuck around for a few years, and they went away. They turned into a surplus, and you had a little ebb and flow. What we're looking at here is a long term. I mean, since I was born, I think the U.S. has had a trade deficit, and it's not a healthy one. We're talking about a distorting trade deficit where really they're funding our extra consumption, giving us a lot of cheap goods, which, you know, like an injection of heroin feels good, when you do it the first time. After a while, you're an addict. So they're funding our extra consumption. It's a distorting effect. There are a lot of industries where the U.S. should have a comparative advantage. And, of course, in economics, they talk about a comparative advantage. You do what you're good at. They do what they're good at.
Right.
You trade the surplus. You're both better off. There are some industries, I think steel is probably one of them, where the U.S. should have a comparative advantage. And yet it's China that's producing all the steel. Okay, it's nice getting a little cheap steel, but the economy is not as well off as it should be because it's not a natural advantage the Chinese have. And, of course, there's nothing we can do about China, but we can do some things about how we let the trade go on.
Right.
And we're not doing a whole lot about it.
And we're not doing any, in my view, I don't think we're doing anything to tap down the currency manipulation, not just by China, but by Japan as well.
Yeah, Japan, I think the yen has been depreciated 30% just recently. For the first time, I don't know ever, but typically a dollar buy you 80 yen. Now it buys, a penny will buy you more than 1 yen. So at least at one point recently, it went above 100. So they're manipulating their currency. And the IMF agrees, too, but the IMF really has no enforcement mechanism.
So I look at this and then I ask the question, you know, are we better off, you know, with the way we're going? And you know, I sat 20 feet from President Obama when he was candidate at Obama, where he said, you can trust me. You know, you heard the clip, trust me. Strong environmental and strong labor. And yet I look at Korea and I look at Colombia and I look at Panama as the template of what I think, because I can't, like we've said, we don't know what the TPP is going to look like, because we're not one of the 600 lobbyists who are ordained to be able to be part of this. But judging from those three, I don't have good hopes.
No, I don't either. Obama has turned into George W. Bush 2.0. George W. Bush himself was not the president he said he was going to be when he campaigned in 2000. I think this is a theme we're going to see again and again, unfortunately, in American politics. I think every president we get is pretty much going to be the same guy. He's going to be bought by corporate interests, probably going to be some type of corporatist with small little liberal or conservative differences on the side. But the main heart of the economic plan is probably not going to alter.
You know, and I look at this and I say, well, you know, there are a number of these countries in the Trans-Pacific Partnership that they're talking about that I don't know that you can have the kind of NAFTA type back and open borders relationship with. But I look at Europe and, you know, there's part of me that goes, you know, with the UK, with Germany, France, I think you can have some back and forth there, because, you know, similar standards of living, theirs are actually a little bit higher. What are we seeing in relations to a European free trade agreement? Any talk on that?
Oh, yes. In fact, you referred to TPP as the mother load. There's a bigger one in the pipeline, going under different names, TAFTA. You usually see it, the Transatlantic Free Trade Area or Agreement. If this talks on that have just started, there's no reason to expect passed it to be significantly different from the TPP, which is not going to be significantly different from NAFTA or CAFTA or CORUS or any of these managed corporatist trade agreements we get into. I forget the figure I saw, but I think NAFTA is going to encompass, was it 60% of the globe's economy or something like that?
Wow.
I mean, it's huge. And it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be done in secret, I imagine. And you're going to see the same basic scheme.
And what does that mean for the average everyday working person? I mean, you know, as we've seen wages stagnate and actually go backwards the last 30 years, what's it going to mean for the average working person here in the U.S.? And as we're pitted against countries like Vietnam and Burundi or whatever the name, I can't even pronounce half of them.
Yeah.
You know, and look, it's a geography lesson at its best, but it's a race to the bottom at its worst.
Well, yeah, the race to the bottom, especially you see in standards. Honestly, one of the most maddening things about these are the ability of corporations to sue governments over putative lost earnings. So let's say that we don't allow mercury above a certain level in fish. Let's say we have this standard. And China allows it. And the TPP gets passed and has this, what's called an investor-state dispute resolution. So a Chinese corporation, which is probably just going to be an arm of the Chinese government, wants to sell fish here, but the mercury levels are too high, but not too high for China. So this Chinese corporation can go to a non-elected secretive body and file a complaint about what they would have been able to earn had they been able to sell in the U.S. And they're going to win because their standard in their own country is lower, and they're going to go by that standard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the perfect example of that, back in the, you know, I'm guessing it was right after NAFTA was passed, a couple years after, where a number of Indian tribes had sued tobacco companies because India, the country of India, had sued under the idea that we've got youth smoking laws, and they don't.
Okay, I had not heard that one.
Yeah,
but it sounds like it's about the same idea. And then we have to compensate them, or our government has to compensate them, for the putative lost profits calculated who knows how. But, of course, the government doesn't have any money. You and I do a little bit, and so we get to pay for their lost profits. This kind of thing is already going on. There's a particularly nefarious aspect of this where if you don't like the regulations in your own country, you open an office in a country with lower standards, and now you're a corporation from that country, so you sue your own government.
So what do we do on this? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it hasn't passed yet. There's got to be voices like Grayson's against it. There's got to be a way to put up, some type of a roadblock to at least get this out into the open and to have an honest public discussion about it. What do we do?
Boy, what do you and I do? We keep doing what we're doing now. We hope that the flame catches on somewhere and turns into a roaring fire. And we got to keep fanning the flames. I'll be honest with you, I'm not overly optimistic. There's too many rich interests that stand to benefit from this, and we all know what happens in cases like that. But that doesn't mean you give up hope. That doesn't mean you stop fighting. It doesn't mean that we can't do it. But
right.
we've got to turn the little flame into a bonfire is what we got to do.
And we got to be talking to each other. We got to be in the streets.
Absolutely. In the streets and on the phones and whatever it takes.
And again, I mean, this was the guy I voted for. And it's just as bad as something that Bush would put forth. I don't see anywhere where it's better. Although I got to be honest, I'm not allowed to know.
Yeah, well, that Bush and Obama were bought by pretty much the same people, and they've been dancing to the same tune.
Yeah, well, this is again back to that whole we need to get money out of politics so we can get honest, decent, regular, average Joes and Janes into office to be able to fight this stuff back.
Well, that was the original vision, of course, of the founding fathers. You came in from the plow, did a little of the government's work at the end of the day, and then went home to your family. Now, unfortunately, we have professional politicians. Then we all know the trouble that that's created.
Again, the website, economyincrisis.org, if you want to find more information on this and other stories about our economy. Matthew Alexander, I appreciate the time. Thanks for taking time
for us. Thanks for having me.
Please come back again often. Policy analyst over at Economy in Crisis. Let's take a quick break. Right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
Question: is making higher education available to every American more important to our national interest than letting Wall Street profiteers make a few more billions of dollars each year? Answer: of course. Yet, our political leaders, pushed by Wall Street lobbyists, have been making the opposite choice for years. As a result, banksters have loaded students down with a mountain of high-interest loans, rising from just over $2 billion a decade ago to nearly $1 trillion last year. Worse, the financiers, either banks or government lenders, have become the gatekeepers of advanced education, shutting out thousands of young people wanting to get ahead but not able to hurdle the formidable financial barrier. This is enormously costly to America and completely unnecessary. The smart choice, as we learned from the GI Bill after World War II, would be to make college and professional training free. Universal access to higher education, i.e. free access, produces a very high return on the public's investment while also producing a widely shared prosperity and a broadly educated citizenry. Of course, an upfront investment in a smarter, more productive, more democratic civilization is pricey. So where do we get the money to do what America needs? Get it from where it went. Wall Street's super-rich speculators are now making millions of super-fast robotic financial transactions per second, generating trillions of dollars a year for them, but producing nothing of real value for us, while distorting and endangering markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, put a tiny tax on each of those automated gambles by speculators, and more than enough money will come into the public coffers to free up higher ed for all. For information, check out United States Students Association at www.usstudents.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. Sanjay Gupta, the guy from the CNN, chief medical correspondent. Remember a couple years back he had written an op-ed advocating against marijuana. No pot for you. It's bad, he said. He said it isn't really very good for you was his exact word. But that was back when he was running for attorney general or surgeon general. Now I guess he's seen the light, did a little documentary work, has read some additional research. He's come out and said that he apologizes. He said, I apologize because I didn't look hard enough until now. I didn't look far enough. I didn't review papers from smaller labs in other countries doing some remarkable research. I was too dismissive of the loud chorus of legitimate patients whose symptoms improved on cannabis. And there are tons of stories. There was a story today, a six-year-old kid who was having migraines and a horrible, outcome, smoking pot, and a six-year-old, not relieved, and everything's wonderful. Sanjay has seen the light, so to speak. Me, I've said, that's where my very libertarian views come in. You want to smoke pot, God. As long as whatever you're doing doesn't affect me or anybody else, God bless you. Do what you got to do. And it might actually be good for the Cheeto industry. But here's my problem. This whole idiotic, nonsensical war on drugs, not doing so well. And this latest story that I came across a couple of days back, I, as a parent, have no idea how you just wouldn't lose your mind over this. This couple, evidently, they were partaking in the weed a little bit while their infant was sleeping. Down in Texas, they were found out. Their two-year-old was taken from them. I guess the kid would have been like a year old at the time. The Department of Child Services came in, snatched the kid because, they're bad parents. Put the kid into foster care. Foster care moved from one place to another because, bad conditions in the first one. Moved to the second one where a 54-year-old woman, Cheryl Small is her name, who had had, a couple of complaints in the past, it was where, the two-year-old little girl was placed. Turns out the 54-year-old woman, not according to reports, not very happy, violently, angrily, whatever, swinging the child around. Child's not dead. And, I look at this and I go, explain to me how we got to this point. And it's this insane view of pot or, I guarantee you, if the parents would have been drinking, not a word. Not a word. My heart goes out to these people, man. I mean, I don't know how you wake up in the morning. I know I'd be one angry person. I'll tell you that. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, ricksmithshow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast that you're on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. Questions, comments, something on your mind, something I said got under your skin. rick@ricksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back here in hour three, we're going to talk a little bit about the ALEC protest going on in Chicago, the 40th annual American Destruction Conference put on by the good folks at ALEC. Quick break, right back with hour three. Stick around.
To the Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to the Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Late Tuesday, the Pentagon reported that mandatory furlough days for Department of Defense employees will be reduced from 11 to 6. The reduction in furlough days was made possible thanks to extra savings in the budget identified by the Pentagon in the current fiscal year. That means the majority of civilian defense employees will see their last forced furlough next week. The announcement means that teachers employed by the Defense Department will no longer be required to take a single furlough day when classes start at the end of this month. Labor unites with Citizen Trade Campaign and students against TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Doug Cunningham reports.
The ugly, grim reality of free trade export factories' brutal exploitation of workers is prompting the Teamsters and other groups to call for the U.S. to suspend TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa.
Vietnam should not be rewarded for its bad behavior, and especially should not be allowed to participate in the TPP. Now, that's why the Teamsters are joining with the Citizens Trade Campaign, the Communication Workers of America, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Unite Here, the Carpenters Union, United Students Against Sweatshops, to call for the suspension of trade discussions until Vietnam ends the abuses and lets people join unions and stop the discrimination.
Scott Nova, Executive Director of the Worker Rights Consortium, says the abuses in Vietnamese export factories serving brands like Nike, Converse, and others include forced labor, child labor, physical beatings, and gender discrimination. Workers can't join unions other than the Communist Party-dominated VGCL.
In 2011, even a representative of the country's official labor union called wages in Vietnam's export factories, quote, shockingly low, unquote. Today, the unfortunate truth remains that made in Vietnam is largely synonymous with sweatshop labor. In our experience at the Worker Rights Consortium, to the extent that the response of global corporations and trading partners to those countries is to reward those countries by putting more business into the country, the countries get exactly the message you would expect them to get, which is that they should keep doing what they're doing.
An unfair labor practice strike by Mobile Rail Solutions workers in Chicago has entered its eighth day. The workers are seeking representation by the industrial workers of the world, and they accuse the company of firing three employees who had been actively organizing. The workers are seeking pay and benefits comparable to similar companies in the rail industry. The strike is intended to push the company to address ongoing safety concerns and reinstate the fired workers. A petition has been filed by the workers with the National Labor Relations Board seeking an election.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News.
Volkswagen just invested in Tennessee in a right-to-work state at a low cost with less health care. Why should we prop others up when other companies can compete in this marketplace? It's time to let these people learn the lesson the hard way.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So today, again, the ALEC folks, their 40th How to Destroy America Tour conference going on. You know, the people who brought us the voter suppression laws that, you know, we're fighting here in Pennsylvania, the dead on the ground laws that they've got in places like Florida, more laws to preempt communities from saying we want to have living wage ordinances. They want the privatization and profitization of all of our services, be it the wine and spirit shops, the lottery, or our education system, and so much more. The destruction of workers' rights and the destruction of consumer rights, all of that brought to us by the now 40-year-old ALEC. And it's a good thing that there are people out in the streets there in Chicago, which is kind of a curious place to hold this. I would have thought somewhere a little more corporate friendly. But here to talk a little bit about it, someone who's been there, was out on the streets today, Tammy Vinson. She's a special ed teacher in the Chicago area. Oddly enough, the school she taught at last year closed. Thanks, Rom. Tammy, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. Tell me what went on today in Chicago.
Well, there were a number of unions, a number of community groups, a number of people in the street outside of the Palmer House. So we picketed around the Palmer House, you know, chanting that ALEC needs to go. Then we had a press conference with a number of people speaking and just telling them there's shame on them. We're not sure why they're in Chicago, why they're here trying to disrupt so many things that we hold dear to ourselves. That's pretty interesting.
I've said a number of times, you look at the people in those conferences, the people who fund and put on a conference like this ALEC conference, and these are the people who are systematically dismantling everything that my grandparents' generation fought, bled, and died for.
Yes.
And all of the policy that they pursue, all of the agenda that they pursue, makes poverty in our country much worse, makes the opportunity to climb into the middle class that much harder, and makes just average everyday daily life for working people worse.
Yeah, and one of the things is in conjunction with the Fight for 15, so we had a lot of, people are just asking for a living wage. People are just asking for, just the basic services that, have been part of our society for so long, and it's just basically a fight to reclaim our democracy.
I look at this, and I keep saying that, like my grandparents' generation did, they turned factory jobs and retail jobs and truck driving jobs into middle class jobs that you could survive and raise a family on. And in my grandparents' generation, you could do that with one person working. We need to do that with the jobs that are here today. And sadly, what we've got is we've got fast food jobs, we've got service sector, retail jobs. Those are the jobs that we need to turn into living jobs in the middle class jobs today.
And that's why I think as educators we're so passionate about it, because we're not even preparing our students for anything that would make them competitive. So we're teaching them to take tests, we're not teaching them to think. We're not being allowed to do what we need to do, even to give them a sense of social justice, understanding that they have rights and responsibilities as citizens of the United States. And with the fact that we're spending so much more time teaching to these state mandated tests that, they're the hedge fund people are creating for our kids, they're not really learning anything. And school is just a place where they're being forced to go. They're being penalized for every little thing. And so, there was a meeting the other day, and they're saying that in Chicago, we have about 56,000 dropouts, high school dropouts. So instead of addressing the issue as to why they're not staying in school, they're creating alternative schools. Magic Johnson scheduled to open two in Chicago, and I'm thinking, what does he have to do with education?
Well, hold on, stop. Magic Johnson now has a charter school.
Two of them.
There.
I don't know if they're charters there. There's supposed to be some sort of alternative school. So there's one that'll be on the west side, one on the south side. So this is what we're spending money on.
I look at this, and it's the same thing that they're doing in Philadelphia. It's the same thing they're doing in a lot of large cities across the country. And I keep saying, look, once they're done destroying places like Philly and Chicago and Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Detroit and all these other places, it's coming to small town too.
Yeah.
We're all in this pot. It may just be now that you guys are the ones that are taking the brunt of it right now, but eventually we're all in it. And I look at you as a special ed teacher, which God bless you.
Yeah.
When I started my college years, I wanted to get in to be a special ed teacher. Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I had to get out of it.
Yeah. I love it. I know. And, I think I work with kids that have, they've been classified as being, learning disabled, but in some cases, our kids we're making it so that education is, even though we say it's supposed to be individualized and we're trying to meet the needs of the kids, we're trying to get them to fit into something. And once they don't fit there, they're being labeled and they're being tracked or they're being basically pushed out of school. And with the charter school and the goal towards privatization, they're going to be further marginalized. And then what type of society are we going to have? We're just, relegating a whole class of, whole group of kids to just there. There's going to be nothing for them. And that's going to be to the detriment of us all. And I don't think that's what people are really considering.
You
can't do that.
And that's when manufacturing will come back. When we're Bangladesh and half of our kids aren't going to school, and we've got abject poverty throughout our cities and our urban areas and our rural areas, that's when it'll come back.
And, you know, what do we need to do as a society to make sure that doesn't happen? And I think that's why, you know, we were protesting today. Because, you know, I think, you know, ALICE has been, that group has been around for over 40 years, and they've been affecting so many of our policy. And I'm not sure that people are now beginning to connect the dots. And hopefully this will be what it takes for more people to be enlightened. And which was, I think, significant about today, that there were so many different groups. And I think in some cases you think the goal is to keep us separate so that we don't do anything together as a group to, you know, we know that there's something going on that means us no good. So what are we going to do?
Well, what you guys did today. They're out in the streets.
Yeah, right.
Because I think this is what we have to do as a nation to take our country back in the right direction and point out what groups like ALEC does. Because, you know, up until a year or two ago, nobody heard of what this group did, but they were extraordinarily powerful in state houses across this country.
Yeah, I agree. And it was coincidental. There was an article, I guess a study by the Center of Media and Democracy, CMD.
Right.
Yeah, they released a study today, and they just showed how many different laws, how many different states that ALEC has influenced policy, and they've been doing it. You know, they influenced the Stand Your Ground in Florida in 05, but there's, I think, 40-some other states that have the same law.
Or some type of law similar to it.
Similar to it, you know, right, and then the right to work law. So, yeah, I thought that was significant. That was, you know.
But it's all of
our goal is to...
You know, it's all of the right-wing agenda. It's all of the privatization. Mm-hmm. It's all of the destruction of the commons. It's all of the destruction of worker rights. It's all of, you know, get rid of education and, you know, pensions and all of that stuff. It's the whole, it's the right-wing cocktail.
Yep, I agree.
So tomorrow, I guess, another day, what's the plan for tomorrow?
Tomorrow, I'm not sure about the ALEC protest because in Chicago, again, with our school closing, the education committee of our city council is having a meeting. So a lot of us are just going to that because during the school closings, we were having hearings, we were having meetings, and our aldermen were pretty much silent throughout the entire thing. So now tomorrow, they've decided to have a meeting, so a committee meeting, so we're going to go there, at least get some answers. And that's the thing, we keep electing people to represent us in office, and they don't, you know, do their job. They don't show up.
Well,
so our goal is to, you know, accountability is such a big word. We want to try to keep them accountable.
So, you know, as a special ed teacher, and as I said at the beginning, I guess the school you taught at last year, one of the many closed by Rahm Emanuel and the school district there?
Yes.
What's it mean for the kids in the school that you taught at?
Well, the school that I was at, our kids were being divided into two different schools because I'm in the Austin area. And the school that I worked at was on the main street, Central. On that same street, there were five other schools. At the same time that they were, you know, building schools, opening charters, our student population was being displaced because a lot of the low-income housing was being torn down. So the fact that they closed our school on the basis of underutilization, they created a situation where we had to be underutilized because there are only so many students you can serve, and there are five schools trying to all serve the same population of students.
That's
so anyway, so the school that I taught at was between two other and just in the middle of two other schools. So our school would be going, students would be going there, and most of the teachers are following them as well.
Well, at least that's good. I appreciate you being out in the streets today, Tammy. Thank you so much. Thank you for filling us in on what went on today.
Alrighty.
I appreciate the time. Thanks. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. Ronald pointed out with an email here, rick@therickSmithShow.com, if you want to send me one, why it's in Chicago for the 40th anniversary. Evidently, ALEC was started in Chicago in 1973 by Paul Weyrich, a guy who founded the Heritage Foundation, you know, the guy who said he doesn't want everybody to vote. Kind of interesting, incestuous kind of relationship. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Here is a rainbow. Well,
thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Question. Is making higher education available to every American more important to our national interest than letting Wall Street profiteers make a few more billions of dollars each year? Answer, of course. Yet, our political leaders, pushed by Wall Street lobbyists, have been making the opposite choice for years. As a result, banksters have loaded students down with a mountain of high-interest loans, rising from just over $2 billion a decade ago to nearly $1 trillion last year. Worse, the financiers, either banks or government lenders, have become the gatekeepers of advanced education, shutting out thousands of young people wanting to get ahead but not able to hurdle the formidable financial barrier. This is enormously costly to America and completely unnecessary. The smart choice, as we learned from the GI Bill after World War II, would be to make college and professional training free. Universal access to higher education, i.e. free access, produces a very high return on the public's investment while also producing a widely shared prosperity and a broadly educated citizenry. Of course, an upfront investment in a smarter, more productive, more democratic civilization is pricey. So where do we get the money to do what America needs? Get it from where it went. Wall Street's super-rich speculators are now making millions of super-fast robotic financial transactions per second, generating trillions of dollars a year for them, but producing nothing of real value for us, while distorting and endangering markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, put a tiny tax on each of those automated gambles by speculators, and more than enough money will come into the public coffers to free up higher ed for all. For information, check out United States Students Association at www.usstudents.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. And, of course, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on the smartphone. I look at this, and, you know, this whole Alec thing, 40 years, and it makes perfect sense. And thank you, Ronald, for the email pointing that out, because I actually, as our producer Brett said, we knew that. It's just, we evidently didn't know that. I had forgotten that Weyrich was, because it was all of that whole incestuous pool of beginning money. And that's the thing. You go back and you look at the Powell memo, which I suggest you Google Powell memo, read it. It's a quick read, but man, is it eye-opening and looking at where we are today. He wrote it back in 1971. A little bit later, Nixon made him a Supreme Court Justice, one of the most powerful men in the country, and he cast some really pro-corporate votes that have things that we're saddled with to this day. But it was his treatise, if you will, that got corporate America going. You know what? We're going to screw those unions and those workers. They've gotten too big for their britches. We're going to put them down. And as Powell said at the end of his piece, big business should put a statesman-like sum of 10% of their profits into pushing back. And of course, buying media, funding radio and television and print and people to write books and all of these thought tanks that, You keep pushing the bounds, keep pushing the bounds. And it's amazing to me that in just such a short period of time, I mean, we're only talking, you know, just 40 years, Alex been in place. And look at how powerful they were. And flew completely under the radar. Until, you know, a couple of these, until the voter suppression really, and then, of course, you know, the dead on the ground laws, these stand your idiotic stand your ground laws. They really flew under the radar. Massive power. Massive influence. The voices behind all of the privatization, all the neoliberal trade, all of the really bad stuff. The Alec of the world. And someone like Weyrich, you know, you just, it's amazing how people who we've never really heard of have had so much influence and so much power over our country. And, you know, and I play this clip quite often because I think it's an important one to remember. This is 1980 in front of 20,000 Baptist ministers in Dallas, Texas. 1980. And then you stop and think about it. Think of the long vision, that the wealth class in this country has. All this stuff was envisioned back in 71. They're just working towards it and working and working and spending money on it to push it into our consciousness and onto us. This is what Weyrich said back in 1980.
How many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome? Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And if you can hold that vote down, hey, so much better yet. If you can suppress the vote, so much better yet. If, as Tom Corbett said when he was candidate, Corbett, if we can just hold the vote down in Philadelphia, we'll do okay. And then you look at Republican Chairman Gleason, who recently said, well, you know, hey, voter suppression, yeah, you know, that's what's responsible for the 5-point swing between the beating McCain took and the beating that Romney took. They understand this. They understand that putting the big money behind their policy and constantly pushing, constantly reinforcing, funding radio. You know, why do you think talk radio is vast majority of its radical right-wing pro-corporate drivel? Why do you think that is? It's not because it's what people want. It's because what corporate America wants and what big business wants, because they're willing to fund it. Corporate America is not going to fund a program like mine. Who's going to say, you know what, workers should share in the profit that they create? I mean, right there precludes me from any big companies. Now, every small business in this area should be supporting this program because I'm as pro-small business as anybody in this country. But that's not what the right will say. Oh, you want workers to be able to share in the wealth. That's anti-business. No. That's pro-small business. That means there's money in people's pockets. That means there's the ability to save a little bit, maybe start your own, put out your own shingle. And I'll have a little bit of disposable income to help those small businesses. But, you know, the corporatists, whenever you start talking about workers having rights and voters having rights, and taxing corporations on what they use, oh boy, that's heresy. What are we going to do? I look at this statement, and you know this whole idea of business friendly, and you know we've been talking about for the last several months this situation at Patriot Coal, which I cannot believe is not a national story, is not on the tongue of every worker in this country. Because if they're allowed to get away with what they've done, nobody's safe. If you don't know what the plan is what they've done is they created this this company, Patriot Coal. And I love that, Patriot Coal. They created them in 2007. Saddled them with 47% of Peabody Coal's liabilities, meaning their pensioners and their health care for pensioners. And the vast majority of those people never worked a day for Patriot Coal, but there they are, saddled in this new creation. Well, they gave them about 11% of the assets that they had. So they over indebted them, undercapitalized, and of course they went bankrupt, which it was designed to do. All so that they could wipe out the liability. A bankruptcy judge would come in and just say, oh, all you pensioners, you're screwed. Or goodbye, you lost your health care, you lost the... Gone, done. There are some in government who think you can do that with government. And I look at this representative, Ted Yohu, or Yo-ho, Yahoo, no, Y-O-H-O, Yo-ho. Oh, that doesn't sound right, does it? Anyway, Ted, he seems to believe that we just don't pay our bills. Because understand, we're coming to the debt ceiling again. It's going to have to be raised. Now, the Treasury Department can't tell us when because evidently the spending reductions that have been going on over the last couple of years have made things a little bit better. And also, revenues are up. So they're projecting maybe a little longer than this August that they had originally projected, maybe September, October, but it's going to have to happen. Well, Yoho, he's going, well, you know, just tell them we're not going to pay them. Say, yeah, we owe you money, but we're getting our house in order and we're not going to pay you. And he seems to think that, you know, the credit rating thing, that'll be fine. Everything will be fine. Now understand, this is a guy who, I just recently talked about Yoho not too long ago. If you remember him, he said that the Affordable Care Act's tanning tax was racist because, well, his view is that President Obama wouldn't need tanning services. So that, I'm sure you get it. But his view is we don't pay our bills. Basically taking the country through a bankruptcy. What would that mean? If that happened, I think you would see the rest of the world hit the tank along with us. But it's guys like this who somehow have gotten into Congress. Scares me to death. Just nuts. And frightening on so many levels. And you listen to some of these folks and you wonder, how exactly did you get there? And I know, look, most of the time it's just a popularity contest. You put out the color brochure with the bright smiling family and someone voted for you. But I would like our elected officials to at least not be nuts. And I mean that in really a very nice way. But you listen to some of these Tea Party people. We're going to shut the government down if you give health care to those people. And, of course, Yoho is one of them, who's dead set against, the Affordable Care Act. But here's the thing that's interesting to me, and I think the Republicans are getting it, that the American people actually want health care. They may not be thrilled with the Affordable Care Act, like I'm not thrilled with it, but I think all of us get now that it's moving in the right direction. It's the law of the land. We can improve it and make it better, and that it's going to actually make people's lives better. And if there are things that need to be fixed, we work for that into the future. Now, my fear all along in the Affordable Care Act is that the Republicans will do what they've done. And that is try and do everything they can possibly think of to defund it and starve it. And, in fact, Mitt Romney, his statement the other day was right along those lines. Don't do anything stupid and radical like shutting down the government. Just quietly and slowly, behind the scenes, starve it to death. so that when people look at it, they go, oh, it's not working because it doesn't have the funds or the resources to actually do what it's supposed to do. And then they'll blame Obama for it. Because all we can then say is, well, see, it wasn't conceived right. Now, granted, they were responsible for defunding it. Granted, they were responsible for setting up really bad exchanges. Because here in Pennsylvania, our governor still hasn't said what they're going to do with the exchange yet. He hasn't taken the Medicaid expansion money, but they haven't said what the exchange is going to be either. While states like California already got something in place that looked pretty damn good. Here in Pennsylvania, not so much. And I got to be honest, there's part of me that's saying, you know, Tom, stay kayaking. Keep going. Keep going down the river. And maybe, you know, take you down the Delaware, you know, right out to sea. We can only hope. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Evan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. 2561.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Well, it seems that Reince Priebus, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, keeps digging. I think he's digging himself a really kind of a deep hole here. He was on Morning Joe this morning with Mika and Nicole and a couple other ones, and he's going on about how now he's not going to allow the debates to be on NBC or CNN, but he's going to want to pick the moderators, and the moderator is going to have an interest in the Republican Party. He says, I have to choose moderators that are actually interested in the Republican Party and our nominees, not actually interested in the country. Country be damned. Care about party first. I think this is going to turn around, and at some point, even Republicans got to go, what are you talking about? Just a thought. Anyway, here to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and around the world, I've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
So what do you think? Now they're going to pick their moderator, get their own ringer in there, and eventually, I guess, if you have enough money, the campaign will be able to pick the moderator.
Well, that's not going to happen because, honestly, the debates are done by the Presidential Debate Commission.
I know.
Precisely to stop all this kind of junk.
So, and knowing that, which I do, you know, why is he on this, Why is he on this kick? I get, you know, you don't want him to play the, you want to throw some muscle around and not play the Hillary series, which I got to be honest, not even I'm going to watch. But you know, is it that he thinks we're that stupid that he has that kind of power?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
honestly, I think that, you know, we were just, a bunch of us were just talking today about the fact that in the olden days, if you were head of the Democratic or Republican National Committee, that was a very big job. Now they don't have very much power.
I mean, he's a glorified fundraiser.
Well, basically, that's what they do. That's right.
You know, and the reality is if it was a big job, I think Reince Priebus would be the last guy to get it.
Right. Well, he's not going to, clearly.
Anyway, what's going on?
Sometimes the littlest things.
I hear we're going to be boycotting the Olympics again over this time. I guess first it was over Snowden. I guess now it's over the gay Russians' gay stance.
I don't know that we're going to be boycotting the Olympics. We certainly aren't going to do it alone. The only way we would do it is if we did it with other countries.
Am I the only one who thinks that this is just dumb?
Well, it depends. If a lot of the countries get together and say, your policy on gay people has got to go, then they may have some real validation. I just don't know that that's going to happen.
Now, I don't know what's going to happen either. But at the end of the day, I got to be honest, I'm uncomfortable holding these folks hostage. I mean, you know, I remember the last boycott, and I remember...
Well, the last boycott definitely did not work.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't... It never does what they tell us it's going to do. And the people who end up getting hurt are the people whose lives are dependent and whose lives have been put into this. And as, you know, as having been an athlete in the past, I gotta be honest, it's not about that for the athletes. And I hate having them in the middle of a push-pull on any issue, to be honest.
Well, I think athletes, the Olympics is supposed to be separate, and hopefully it will be. But a lot of people are mad at Russia right now.
Yeah, on a number of levels. And one of the things that I'm kind of just dumbfounded by is that people think, well, are saying that, well, you know, he's the KGB. Well, no kidding. When did you figure that out?
Ha-ha.
I mean, has...
That's hilarious.
I mean, it's been my
That's
view that...
True.
He's been there all along, and just because him and Bush were buddy-buddying around, and Bush looked into his soul, and they were soulmates, and they drove around in Putin's Volkswagen, tells me that Bush was probably more like Putin than a lot of us want to think.
Yes, except he didn't take over as being president several times over.
Well, this country wouldn't stand for that.
I know they wouldn't, and that's what's good about this country.
Exactly. Let's move on. The president the other day gave a big speech, threw out the idea of dumping Fannie and Freddie. Some information there?
Yes, it does look like there is a very good possibility that they are going to get rid of Fannie and Freddie. However, Fannie, like any good quasi-government, whatever corporation it is fighting back, and they just announced that they made $10.2 billion, and they're going to repay $10.1 billion to the Fed.
Okay, and how much do they owe?
That's a very good question. It's above that. That's certainly not going to pay all the debt.
I got to be honest. There's, you know, to me, I look at these things, and I've yet to find anything that we've privatized, that we've cut off and given to Wall Street or to the quote-unquote free market that's actually done well for people like me or working people in this country. And I look at this, and while it's got some problems, I still think it's something we should hold and fix rather than – and on the other part of this, I don't know who's going to take it, given the situation that it's been allowed to get into either.
Well, yes. And that's – well, it's a question of whether they're going to somehow change the law, which is what I think they're going to wind up doing.
Now, what do you think of Representative Yoho or Yoho or Yahoo or whatever his name, saying that we should, you know, just we should just not pay our creditors? Ted Yoho.
I think he's trying to grandstand. He's trying to make a name for himself, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah, because I look at this and I go, you know, that's the idea. That's the corporatist idea. We could just run the government through bankruptcy and come out clean on the other side.
We could, but of course that's not going to happen. Look what happened to Greece. And by the way, the president met with the Grecians today.
Okay, and what came out of that?
Well, it's unclear. I mean, you know, they talked about economic cooperation. I mean, it was some whatever. The president is going to be doing a press conference tomorrow, so perhaps they'll answer a more direct question.
Yeah, I can't wait for the big press conference. In fact, I was looking at an article over at The Hill, and they were there are 10 questions that they would ask if they got the chance. And, you know, one of them was the Snowden thing. One of them was the Olympic thing. And a really pressing, one of the top 10 questions that should be asked is, should the Washington Redskins change their name?
Well, you're right, and somebody will ask that, you can be sure.
But I guess it just shows me how twisted our media is, because none of their 10 questions were really about what I think people are concerned about, which is the economy, jobs, infrastructure, education, healthcare, moving this country in the right direction. But again, you know, The Hill, another Washington inside piece of rag newspaper, probably deserves to be at the bottom of a birdcage, if that. Just my thought.
Well, some, you know, like any newspaper, there's some very good reports and there's some really lousy ones.
So I see the president's giving out medals of freedom.
He's giving a lot of medals of freedom out, 16, and they're going to not unusual people, people that you wouldn't see George Bush give them to. You certainly wouldn't see George Bush give one to Oprah Winfrey. So she's going to be getting one. You're going to see one going to Dr. Sally Ride, the first female astronaut.
Right.
She, of course, has died, but she's gay, or was gay. You're going to see one going to Senator Dan, the Senator Inouye from Hawaii, who's also passed on.
Right.
Why am I blocking her name? Who started Ms. Magazine?
Gloria Steinem.
Gloria Steinem. She's also going to get one.
Yeah, but my favorite one is, and this is the bias of Obama. This is why Obama is going to be a bad president. Ernie Banks, Mr. Cub, a Cubs fan in the White House. Oh, say it's not so.
A Cubs fan in the White House?
Yeah, I mean, that one of the medals of freedom is going to Ernie Banks.
He is one of them. A Cubs, right, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, and also civil rights leader, C.T. Vivian, Cordy Tyndall Vivian, a civil rights leader from Illinois, also got one. See, he's got an Illinois bias.
Well, he does, but he also has a liberal bias, or at least a Democratic bias.
And you would
not see a lot of these people, as I said.
No, in fact, you know, I guess since this was started, I was talking to someone today, and I go, you know, I actually didn't know when the Medal of Freedom started. I had to look it up. It was something that JFK did.
It's 50 years ago, JFK. This is the 50th anniversary.
And there have been something like 500 recipients of this medal.
That's right. That's unbelievable.
I mean, it's a pretty big thing.
I've seen people actually wear the medal at a black tie event.
Wow. Well, I mean, if you're one of 500 people in the last 50 years to get one, I'd be sleeping with it.
I would too.
Yeah, I mean, it just is what it is.
It is amazing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it says something about who you are, and I don't care who gave it to you. I don't care if it was Bush or whoever. I think it's an amazing accomplishment.
Yes.
So let's move on. The Saudi government is giving $100 million for a terrorism institute. What's that about?
Well, you know, what I think this is about, actually, is that this is about the Saudis trying, and this is the scuttlebutt at the UN, the Saudis are trying to make it look good on terrorism. There are 22 countries that are going to be involved in sort of a round table exchanging ideas, this institute on terrorism. But a lot of people feel like the Saudis, you know, have a two-headed view about this. On one hand, they're against it, and on another hand, they say...
They are it.
Right.
I mean, you know, you look at the people who, you know, the hijackers.
Right.
Mostly Saudis.
Exactly. So there's been a lot of discussion about it.
And $100 million to the Saudi government? I don't know that that's an awful lot.
That's
just a couple
them.
Barrels of oil.
Right. Not for them. They certainly have, it's a lot for us.
Yeah, that's interesting. I understand the Pentagon's going to be expanding benefits to the LGBT community.
And they certainly will. And I told Shalene she left the military much too quickly, but now 10 days off to get married in a state that accepts marriage, housing benefits, health benefits, et cetera, for partners.
Well, that's got to send the wacko right wing.
Oh, it'll send them to the moon. They won't even need a spaceship.
Because here in this state, you know, ever since the Register of Wills in Montgomery County issued the first marriage license here in Pennsylvania, who we had on the program just after he did it, the right wing in this state is just ballistic. In fact, you know, the Attorney General said she's not getting involved. She says the whole Defense of Marriage Act thing, wholly unconstitutional. And now the governor had to go and say he's going to do something about it. And I'm sure it's a fight he really didn't want to get into. But he doesn't have much of a choice if he wants to be governor next time around.
Ah.
But, you know, either that or he's just off kayaking, you know, one or the other. Because we had this little shooting, I don't know if you've heard, crazy guy with a junkyard for a front yard went in and shot a couple people at a municipal town meeting.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, well, not many people did. I mean, it hasn't made what I think it should be. Crazy guy went and shot people through a wall. And, you know, somebody, he went to go into the room and somebody tackled him and shot him with his own gun. Good.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And our governor never said a word about it. In fact, you know, this week he was kayaking. He issued other statements on other things, but nothing about government officials being targeted. Interesting.
Amazing.
Well, it is our governor, Punxsutawney Tom. You know, he pokes his head out every once in a while when there's some corporate cheese out there to be had.
I love I love what you're saying. You're very funny.
Well, looks aren't everything. Also, Jay Carney had a press briefing today.
Yes, he did. And he talked about Russia. He was very, you know, he didn't really want to talk about much of anything other than then he was asked, of course, about this new looking into people's information and stuff. And he basically said, oh, well, you know, they only look at a little bit of what they
say. A little.
Right. I mean, if you and I were to communicate about what we talk about on radio, which we do, and we mention terrorist names by name, they would start to look into our email.
Oh, I'm sure they would. I'm sure and I hope they're looking at my email because there's things that they should learn. You know, I send people information and tell people what I think, and it's stuff that I think our government should learn. And they've got to learn it somewhere. Why not here?
Good point.
And finally, the NRA is coming out saying that is asking the Supreme Court to strike down decades-old regulation.
Can you imagine? Listen, you know, what I like to say is that people – well, this isn't from me. It's from a professor I once said. They said rental car companies know what they're doing, not renting cars to people who are under 25, in terms of they understand brain anatomy and brain chemistry. And now they want to get guns into people's hands who are 18 years old? I don't think so.
Well, here's the thing. You know, if Trayvon Martin would have had a gun, maybe he would have been the one standing. I'm waiting for the NRA to say if he had had a gun, maybe he'd be alive today.
Maybe.
Isn't that their position? Everyone should have a gun.
That is their position, but there's a lot of maybes.
Yeah, I mean, this is insane to me, though. But it is in line with what the NRA's lack of mental capacity has brought us.
Yes, and they are going to try and make this a Supreme Court case. Maybe they figure they know they're going to lose, but they'll win money.
And that's the big part of it. But I look at this crazy guy.
It's a fundraising trip.
Sure it is. You know, the crazy junkyard guy who shot up the municipal meeting. Gun nut. You know, and here again, you start talking about mental health issues, a massive hoarder. Is one of these guys who's been ranting for years about government and ranting for years. And everyone just thought, yeah, he's just a crazy guy. Well, crazy guy with a gun, this is what it equals.
Yeah.
Sad stuff. Alan, it's always great talking with you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. You have a good one.
You do as well. Our good friend Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Never you will look back again. You fight on to the end. Together we will live on forevermore. In the plan we have defended from all things that are good. Now we are defenseless.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
January of 1964 was a time to remember for many Americans. The Beatles released their first album. New York announced plans to build a World Trade Center. The Surgeon General announced smoking kills, and President Lyndon Johnson declared a war on poverty during his first State of the Union address. January 1964 was also a momentous year for the American truck drivers. The nation's truckers saw the first nationwide labor contract. The National Master Freight Agreement, covering some 450,000 truck drivers employed by 16,000 companies across the country, set a nationwide minimum wage of $3.33 per hour, or $23.63 in 2008 dollars, as well as providing health care and retirement benefits for all its members. The 1964 National Master Freight Agreement set a nationwide standard for working conditions, giving drivers a voice on the job and the power to stand up to abusive treatment, and eventually the ability to refuse to drive equipment the driver deemed unsafe. Led by labor visionary James R. Hoffa, this victory was the crowning achievement of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters as one of America's most influential unions. This landmark agreement created a framework for all national contracts to follow. Jimmy Hoffa, the man who famously quipped, "I may have many faults, being wrong is not one of them," was certainly right about the benefits, power, and influence of such a national agreement for workers, both union and non-union. Wages and benefits earned by truck drivers brought millions of hardworking men and women solidly into the middle class by rewarding hard work with a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. For generations, the National Master Freight Agreement served as the industry standard for all truck drivers, raising wages, improving benefits, and providing a safer workplace for drivers and the motoring public. Unfortunately, since the 1980 passage of trucking deregulation, the industry has resorted to cutthroat competition based on who is willing to work for less. In this environment, the National Master Freight Agreement has lost some of its power in lifting truck drivers out of low wage, no benefit, and hazardous conditions. Currently, many non-union truck drivers are earning at or near poverty wages while pushing legal limits. For many truckers, their pay is solely determined by the number of miles they drive. Breakdowns, time spent waiting to be loaded and unloaded, and other delays are shouldered by the driver, in most cases without compensation. 1964 and the years that followed has shown what can be accomplished by workers standing together. Perhaps the future will see resurgence in worker solidarity and the reemergence of a fair day's work, a fair day's pay. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment is brought to you by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, go to www.therickSmithShow.com.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
I'm going to miss her when she's gone. Yeah, she's not running for re-election, evidently. I'm going to miss crazy. Just like I miss Herman Cain and I miss Alan West. I guess they move on and they take their show on the road. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So, you know, I look at this story of the NRA wanting people to, you know, let's get 18-year-olds to buy guns. That's a good idea. So, can buy a gun but can't have a beer. Yeah. And I think about myself. And look, I take things through my own frame of reference. When I was 18, probably not a good thing to have. Not a good thing for an 18-year-old to have a gun. Just not. Anyway, some interesting news from the great state of Florida. More of the stand your ground stuff. A guy from a New Jersey resident was down in Florida. A guy named Robert Rock of Linden, New Jersey. had a knife. This is one of those things. Evidently, he told cops that if people were complaining on him were just haters, and that he had a way with ladies. See, he had a knife, and he was, you know, causing a little trouble. He was at this tiki bar thing, waving his knife around, causing problems, threatening people. And I saw this, and what I thought was interesting about it is he said that he would use the Zimmerman defense because he was streetwise and he knew how the system worked. Now, not only can you use it with guns, you can use it with knives too. Interesting. Norfolk, Virginia. A guy facing weapon charging after he shot himself in the leg. Got in an argument with neighbors. Oh, I love these stories. Got in an argument with neighbors, and, the gunshot in the leg, non-life-threatening. He was transported to the hospital. Preliminary investigations showed that, this Jacobs guy was speeding through the neighborhood when confronted by his neighbors. He returned with a gun and shot himself. If only he would have shot himself, somewhere else. Maybe in the place where he can't reproduce anyway. Good news out of Florida. On Tuesday, Florida prosecutors said they are not going to file homicide charges against the 17-year-old kid who fatally shot the community choir director, shot him in the face. Evidently, another one of these road rage moments where the choir director was driving by, somebody screamed at him, he stopped, they had the confrontation, kid shot him in the face. Kid feared for his life. This is where reality sets in. There are three of these guys standing on the street. I say kids, he's 18. Two people just walked away, just left. Said you're nuts. Whatever your problem is, get back in your car, leave. They turned, they walked. Nothing. This guy decided, well, you got a bat, I got a gun. Bang, you're dead. And, as the prosecutor pointed out, had this been before the law, we would have prosecuted him. But since the law is in place, he doesn't have to flee. He got away with it. And more fun with guns. This one a little worse. A South Miami, Florida man killed his wife. Decided to post the bloody picture of his dead wife on Facebook. The 31-year-old Derek Medina evidently shot her, took a picture of her, and posted it on Facebook with the message, I'm going to prison or death sentence for killing my wife. Love you guys. Miss you guys. Take care. Facebook, people, you'll all see me in the news. He claims, now this is the part that gets interesting. He claims that he was being abused. Can I hear stand your ground? This little woman and the pictures of her, she is not a very big thing. He's a big guy. In fact, one of the big guys, he was one of the male cheer dancer guys for the Dallas Mavericks. Picture of him, big hulking guy. She was abusing him, so he shot her. What a wonderful world we live in. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast, Stitcher on your smartphone. Take the program with you where you go. You can also email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all email personally. In fact, I quite enjoy the banter back and forth and the information that I get. As always, have a great one. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, infamous.